Okay, you're live.
Thank you. This is Netherlands Fire Protection District Board of Directors meeting. Today is January 8, 2020. Roll call, Ray Willis.
Present.
F. Davis.
Present.
Joe Evans. Not here. Nicholas Brodsky.
Here.
Zerbrick's here. Chief Durham.
Present.
Thank you. With Board of Directors present, we have a quorum. Call the meeting to order at 19:02. Do you guys have time to look at the agenda? If so, motion to approve the agenda for tonight's meeting is written.
Yep.
All in favor?
So moved.
Approved.
Aye.
Aye.
Agenda is approved. Four ayes. No against. Any of the public wants to make any comments?
Could we see a copy of the agenda?
Excuse me?
Can we see a copy of the agenda?
Yes, of course.
And then I do have a couple of things I'd like to ask. A statement I'd like to present.
Do me a favor, put your name on the public sign-in sheet and rock and roll.
It's even on here today.
Easy.
Writing utensils.
What are you writing on?
Just making notes to myself, just the things I want to discuss as old business.
Ian, come on up here so it can be recorded, your statement, so it's legible.
Well, probably won't be because the way I talk. Doesn't always come out.
It'll come out right. Don't worry.
Okay. It's possible that this statement may be subject to change if you want to look at the survey. But President, members of the board, and fire chief, I recognise your presence here. I'm here representing a majority of active members of Netherlands Fire. In this context, members includes both volunteer and staff persons of the department who have agreed that I may represent them before the board. The whole of that group is not here, present here tonight, just so you know. Today, this group is making a formal response to the email sent out last week by the board president to the membership. The group would like to engage in discussions regarding the future direction of this department, but would also like some clarification regarding the survey, and that may come. It is extremely unclear to all of us what the vision is and what the anticipated progress is or the attempts that have been made towards fulfilling it. Consequently, trying to answer questions to confirm your unspecified vision is extremely difficult. A vision is not the same as the departmental goals in the policy manual. We would like you to elucidate on what the vision is to enhance our understanding, and hopefully we'll see some of that tonight. From the members' perspective, progress and change are words here that have little meaning. An informal poll of the active membership reveals the general feeling that there is no vision and no progress occurring. If anything, matters are getting worse on a number of levels, and our concerns are mostly ignored or given cursory consideration, then ignored. Given that the president of the board has been explicitly told that there are massive systemic failures, including low staff and volunteer morale and poor turnout by the volunteers, a survey is not something that is going to solve any of this in a timely fashion, especially a survey that takes 4 months to complete. By that time, this department could easily be in freefall failure, if it is not already. We already have captains that are running status one calls on a regular basis, like multiple times in their shifts. This group is comprised of many of the department's most active and highly trained personnel. They welcome the opportunity to be part of the conversation around the current state and future success of the department. The group has compiled and are prepared to present an extensive plan of meaningful changes that are needed to successfully fulfill our mission as trained professional providers of high-quality EMS fire rescue services to the district. We would propose scheduling a special meeting, recorded and entered into the public record for the board to formally consider these proposals and to discuss next possible steps with the group. I'm prepared to answer limited questions at this time if you have any.
All right, thank you for that. Just a couple things from your statement. So part of the survey, I understand that the survey by itself is probably not going to answer or fix certain issues, right? I think that's why we also said on the survey that based on the results of the survey, we will then consider or engage into more of a group discussion. Mm-hmm. Because I think we want to find out from the survey what's bugging the membership or what we could improve upon, what plans could be, and then based on that include membership and officers in a conversation on how that could be done. Mm-hmm. So the survey is not the one and only piece of this action. Okay. So after the survey, there's going to be more discussion on what the result of the survey is going to be.
One further question is that, will the results of the survey be transparent? So will anybody be able to ask for the complete results of the survey?
They will have to, yeah.
Okay.
Right. And so I think the timeline, too, it's not going to be 4 months. I think we're going to talk tonight about some of the survey questions still that we kind of formulated that we, you know, were asking specifically because of that. And I think the idea is to have the survey done February and then have potential groups and further conversation by early April. I think it's part of that email that I sent out.
Those were the words in your email.
So, right. Ian, I'll share with you. You done?
Yeah, go ahead.
I, too, hold contempt for the length of process on problems that we know about today. Mm-hmm. And so myself and some staff have been working pretty hard on some solutions, things that we know to be problems. As example, the training calendar. Mm-hmm. We know that it's shit, and I think we're taking some active steps to correct that. And I don't have to wait for 2 months for you to tell me the training calendar sucks. I believe the intent of the district is to rectify problems as soon as we can. And I wouldn't argue with you that change and resolution has been slow and would appear to fall on deaf ears. Okay? But I'm pretty mindful of some of the dissatisfaction. I would be intrigued to see your plan. I would like to have seen that plan show up some other way than this, but that's okay, because the end goal is to solve the issue.
Okay. Well, a lot of the issues in the plan have been brought to you over years,
that's
and nothing changed.
That's fair. So you got
you
to
understand
that. I got it.
I'm afraid you opened the door with the survey to bring it to say hey.
No, it had to occur. And ironically, I think your membership, so we've done the surveys before, mm-hmm. but not in your recent history. Okay.
There's been two in my history.
Okay. So anyhow, long story short, there's some parallel process that's going to occur with some restructuring of responsibilities, mm-hmm. and our goal is to get a survey and make it work.
Okay. That's pretty much our goal, too.
You ask about the vision and the goals, and since this is a public entity, right, the vision, and since we have a mandate by the state and by the public what we provide, the vision has to be, you know, provide services for our constituents, right? I mean, that has to be the vision. So I would think that the only thing we can debate on that is, you know, how do we fulfill to that vision? Like, I don't want us to recreate the vision. We can't. We know what our vision is. We know what our goals are, right?
Right.
The only way we can debate
issues
is
how we're getting there.
It's changing,
how
how
we
do
get
this.
There.
Yeah.
So this is not. It's not a private company where we're trying to figure out a mission statement or a vision statement.
Okay. I would say it's not dissimilar for, particularly for the members, it's very hard for them to see where the organization is going in the future when there's not some kind of like vision that says, this is what we do. So can I just read you a quick?
Yeah, yeah. Please.
So this was something that was thrown together. Took about 15 different versions. But anyway, so Nederland Fire Protection District exists to offer high-quality EMS, fire and rescue services to our taxpayers and the general public. We are committed to the mental and physical health and well-being of our paid staff and volunteer members. We strive to provide a safe and healthy working environment by focusing on rigorous training processes and standards for our staff and members in accordance with state, NFPA, and other relevant protocols and regulations. That basically says to us, hey, we're committed to you, your health and safety, and getting you trained. And I think some of our concerns stem from those things.
And kind of as a volunteer for years, I mean, I was deputy here 1 year, and I ran lost calls for like 10 years, so I haven't recently, but there was a block of time where I ran a lot of calls. And the general angst that I found with membership, and I hear this from other departments and all other parts of the country, because I make a point of talking to them when they come into my emergency room, and that people forget the fact that this is a volunteer fire department. It doesn't equate over to a general working at 7-Eleven or working at some retail store. And then I think a lot of people come into the volunteer as a fire, you know, as a firefighter with a skewed idea of how it's going to be and how they're going to be treated and what's going to go on. And I think that can be kind of the basis for some things to get kind of angsty and stuff. I mean, it's almost like a fire department is a dictatorship, really. It's like there's a chief, he spits it out, that's what it does, you do what you're told. And to stand there on scene and argue, somebody's dying around the corner, you didn't even know was there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's a different way of the way that things are run in the fire service and the emergency service that doesn't really equate anywhere else except if you're in a hospital or something. I mean, the whole medical world is a very different thing. You know, minutes mean somebody died. You know, so there's a rank and file thing, and yeah, it sucks sometimes, but it's a whole different way than what happens at a regular job. You know, it's not
and
a regular.
None of us disagree with that statement at all.
And look, I think the statement is fair, and in our current service plan under Section 1, you know, Paragraph A, we have a goals and purposes section, and that is a pretty much, in different words, to some extent, says what you said. But nothing said that we could, you know, review the statement and modify the statement if we wanted to.
I don't think the statement itself is the issue. I think the underlying how we're getting there is more the issue.
Yeah, I would love to hear what you have to say, all of it, because that's the whole point of the survey. I mean, bring it on, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Save us the trouble of coming up with the survey.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear it.
We are giving you the opportunity if you want to meet with us.
I don't problem coming to the next board meeting.
Yeah, we have trimmed down the list. So basically I asked a number of the members what their concerns were. There was a lot of overlap.
So is the notion of doing the survey, getting the results summarized, and then deciding on groups or committees or whatever it is that satisfactory for right now? In this due process?
In principle at this time. Yes.
So, I would like to hear what they have to say.
Yeah. I don't really want to spin my wheels on a survey asking questions to ferret out problems, to get individual ideas. If you've done the legwork.
Exactly.
Let's just hear it. Let's just do it.
And I may not like some of it, and I understand that, but I guess I would at least like to see the proposal to compare and contrast what else we might be doing.
Yeah, I mean, you probably do know, but all of us were high participating volunteers at some point.
Sure.
I mean, so we've all been part of the Dirty Dozen or the Simple Six or whatever. I mean, we've all been
there.
Where you're coming from
with
total frustration and being very frustrated that you're the only person who shows up at 3 in the morning. Mm-hmm. We all get it. I mean, we've all been there.
The department has definitely evolved from what it was when I joined.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, it was a strict paramilitary environment when we were here, when I started. When you say vision, are you looking at the... what did we call it when we formed the district?
Service plan.
Service plan, yeah.
No, we had something.
Mission.
Mission statement?
No, it wasn't the mission statement. But anyway, we had goals that we set down. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we've met them goals and surpassed them. But yeah, we really have never really set more goals to hit. Now, is that what you're talking about?
Potentially, yeah. Because we, actually, I mean, I've been here 9.5, 10 years. Nobody's ever really told me what the goal is or what this year's goal is, what we're going to do, how we're going to change.
Well,
what
I mean,
we did last year was
we started in a couple barns to this, and this was one of the big plans that we had set was this building and trying to improve our insurance rates and our satellite stations, our trucks.
Yeah. And actually, those are things behind the scenes, which you may or may not know, but have been done very well. Insurance rates have come down for everybody. I mean, that's a big deal. We're saving people money. And they may not even know it. And we don't need to toot our horn telling people we're doing that,
but I do.
We're not here twiddling our thumbs either.
But I do think in fairness, and January is normally when it occurs, and so this is all actions that are consistent, that typically I do roll into a meeting and say, okay, what are the goals for the next year? What do we need to accomplish? Things like that. And whether I've imperfectly done that or not might be subject to interpretation. But we do, and we have had those group level setting discussions throughout history. Not maybe every year, but many years in January, I try and roll in and say, what do we need to work on? So I wouldn't say that we've just been running blindly without regard to effort and improvement. We may not have done it, but I've certainly solicited input at times.
Well, we've tried to do what we can with the limited fund. I mean, we're not a rich district.
I don't think the discussion by Ian is about funding, it's about procedures.
It's not about funding.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so we're not...
I know. All of your funding.
So
I see all of that.
Training. Training was always a huge pain in my ass. I hated it. Because as soon as you try to set out a calendar, all the faces changed. So you're back to basics, trying to teach them so they don't get killed. And the older people, shouldn't have said it that way, but...
No, the more senior.
The more senior people get bored with the fact that you keep this redundant training going on, but... Is that part of your frustration?
There is some frustration.
I never could figure out how to get around it.
Mm. And it's not necessarily about new people. It's about existing people.
So moving forward, the ability to present your ideas, we need to decide the format and the time.
Yes.
Okay. And then do we think that this written vision or plan of yours on behalf of majority of membership will act in lieu of the survey that we're preparing?
We haven't seen it, so we don't know.
Right.
Yeah, we're both in that same boat. We're both going to lay, I don't know what you've got either.
Well, you're going to see 220 questions tonight.
Okay.
That we can discuss ad infinitum. Now, in reality, only 150 of those are general questions. Okay. But I am reluctant to say, what's everybody's idea on training? What's everybody's idea on standards? What's everybody's idea on nighttime response? If you have a plan, don't make me waste my time.
Yeah.
And then there may be, indeed, contentious items that either I don't embrace it for whatever my reason, or the board doesn't embrace it, or there's discussion or accommodation, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, if it were to me, and I realize I don't even have a voice here, I'd like to see the proposed suggestions.
On both sides.
although we can do that at public forum, but I'm not sure that holding it back without having a big giant public board special meeting, I don't know that's how it has to occur, but I understand that's your request.
Mm-hmm. I don't think...
Wait, your request is to present these this plan on the, during a special meeting?
Or engage you in discussions at a special meeting, but it needs to be with both the chief and the board.
Or why not just next board meeting?
We would prefer it to be earlier, but we can do next board meeting.
Is there a way to send these, not questions, but send your statement out ahead of time so we can look at it and come up with our own questions potentially?
Sure.
So I think that would probably help us to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. I've got two questions that I want desperately answered on the survey. Good. And I want to know if you've even... if you actually have a vision for them, it would be fantastic.
Yeah.
How do you get people to show up at 3 in the morning?
We have an answer.
Great.
And a group quorum.
Great. No, great. I don't... Great. How do you get more people to volunteer?
That one, I don't think anybody has an answer for.
Okay, then. No, those are my two. That's okay.
I went to a retention meeting.
You got 50. You got 50%. It's better than 0%. All
right. Yeah. But retaining the people you have is vital. Mm-hmm. It costs us a lot of money to train those people, so keeping them would be good.
All right. So we agreed to have your thoughts or the membership thought mailed to us via email.
Between the two of you.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you? I would suggest mail it to the fire department and then have the fire department distribute it to the board of directors.
I mean, what's next board meeting?
And then I think we'll
February 5th.
Next board meeting is February 5th.
So I'll tell you.
Is that board meeting going to be long enough to do this?
So
are we going to be able to cover all this in one meeting?
That's a real.
Or start.
Or you may have to pick. We're going to work on items 1 and 2.
True. I mean, that's why I want to see. I want to see the statement. I want to see the language, the text of it, so we can kind of, structure it and attack it.
And I can tell you, so we are in parallel. I'm looking at fixing shit now, and I'm working on policy every day. And what I don't want to do is implement that. Mm-hmm. And then pull it back 2 weeks later.
But also, what I want to say to you is that this isn't just on you to do.
I understand.
There are people here who are willing to participate mm-hmm. in the change and make the change. Mm-hmm. That way, the change is a group effort, and it makes it much easier to implement.
I think
there will always be people that don't agree. But
sure. But
it's all about core
areas of responsibility. And so today, Ian. The hot topic, that one of the topics we're going to discuss tonight. And so we, Charlie and I worked, and we'll have an officers meeting upcoming on areas of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that assignment among career volunteer shift officers. And right now, I don't have an answer for a mentor program, as example. Okay. And if you somehow have a solution for a mentor program, that would be lovely to see before I make something that doesn't work. Okay, so just saying. So the sooner that we get eyes on it, mm-hmm. I would like that. I don't have any issue with then discussing it. There may be some things that, like I said, we have the ability, or I have the ability to implement. And then for controversial stuff, then we bring that back to the group discussion. And if that's a special meeting, and if we have to schedule a special board meeting, y'all can discuss that.
All right, so here's what I propose. Take your notes. Would you please prioritize them?
Yes.
Right? So that we, as the board and the chief, have an idea of what is the most pressing issues. Submit them to the fire department. Fire department will issue them to the board. We'll start reviewing them, and we will stop our efforts on the survey for now till we have time to review Ian's questions.
I'm happy with that.
I think that's reasonable.
We're trying to get information from you guys. And if you're going to give it to us, then fabulous.
And then I think as a response to timing, I think once we see the priorities and the text of the topics, then I think we'll decide if we need a special meeting or just attack it a number of topics or the highest priority number of topics during the next board meeting, which is February 5.
How long do you think it would take you to present all of your wishes, wants, desires, and
for the whole weekend?
Do you think it's like a 15-minute, like, here's our bullet points, or do you think it's a much grander, larger?
It depends how much discussion you want to get into about them and how controversial you feel they are. I would allow an hour, 2 hours, like a normal board meeting length, to at least get them in the open and get some thought process moving on them. Your priorities may be different to ours.
Do you feel, I agree that we would like to see them in writing, but do you feel that they would be better presented in this forum, I guess, where you're able to actually discuss it, or do you think that we can get the gist by seeing them in writing as just as well?
I think you'll get the gist in writing. I think they will need to be discussed. Uh-huh. Like I say, you all have opinions on them.
I think the format of the board meeting will allow for that.
No, I'm just trying to get what his best vision for presentation is.
So 7-hour PowerPoint.
7-hour PowerPoint, sweet.
Not unlike tonight.
Do you think it's a reasonable process for us to see it in writing?
Can make that work into it.
No, but do you think it's reasonable for us to see your concerns in writing and then for them to get together to discuss? Or is that going to potentially short-circuit ideas that you have? Or something.
Well, I mean, it gives you the opportunity to think about them and say no, but I'm willing to take that risk.
I think there is
nothing we are asking for that is outrageous. We are not asking for $1 million to buy a new fire truck. We're not asking.
No, we are asking someone who does that. Yeah. We've been asking for that.
Yeah. But no, I just want to make sure that you understand that, you know, the board is here as, you know, we're kind of the overseers, or I don't know, something here, but your best interests are our interests. So it's not like, you know, well, we're not going to do that. You know, I don't want there to be a lot of, like, angst and animosity here. You know, I want you to understand that we want to work with you. I mean, this whole idea of the survey was something that I kind of started throwing out a couple of months ago, going, I know there's these grumblings around, but what the hell's going on and nobody's saying anything. So let's find out what's going on. Let's see if we can make things better so that people aren't running by themselves in the middle of the night or in the middle of the day. It doesn't matter. I mean, just, you know, what the hell is going on, you know? And being as how I'm out there in the world a lot, I every volunteer firefighter that I have contact with, I'm like, what's going on in your department? How do you do this? How do you do it? And I just hear the same kind of stuff constantly, you know? And it's like, okay, is this just how it is, or is there something that can change? So I don't want you guys to feel like, oh man, mom's going to get mad, they're going to yell. You know, it's like we're trying to, we want things to be good. We want to figure out what it is and see. But there are constraints that, you know, government stuff, I mean, there's constraints, there's things that we can't do just because of what this place is. Mm-hmm. But I don't want you guys to feel like, oh, we're going to get yelled at, or we're going to get, you know, there's going to be some kind of, you know, we're going to run you off the road someday or something, you know? I mean, we want to figure out what the hell's going on and what can we do to make things better. So if that was, if you guys can come up with that to us, I mean, because this is the first time I've ever seen anybody at a board. Well, you guys were here last month and I wasn't here, but I've never seen anybody from the membership come to a board meeting.
And I think that potentially is part of the problem that we wish to change. So whether that be as a member of the public.
Yeah.
We try and make the representation here so that we do have an idea of what's going on.
I mean, because none of us are, like, running calls. You know, I don't. I mean, I know the last time I ran a call, which was, I don't know, what, 6 years ago? People are like, you know, who the hell are you? Never mind. But, so we just want things to be better. So we're not going to, there's no shooting the messenger here at all. You know, we don't want there to be, you know, people feeling in the corner that, you know, something bad's going to happen. We want to work stuff out.
Can I ask
Okay. Send your questions out, and then we'll address them. In the meantime, I'll make sure we'll stop the survey. I'll send a note out to the membership.
Okay.
On behalf of our discussion.
So that's what we got started to put the survey out there, and okay, we got to get input from these guys. Well, if you guys got input that you're going to walk in with, that's great. That's fabulous.
And I hope I'm able to say yes to everything you want. I mean, seriously, I mean, that's like, my hope is I can say yes to everything there. I'm not like, I'm going into it hoping I can say yes. I have no even idea what you're asking for, but I'm hoping.
I'm going to make big asks now.
All right, you exhausted your 3 minutes.
I appreciate it.
Are you good?
Listening to my time. Right. Yeah, I'll watch this to you. Probably be going to have 2 weeks to do that, so you have 2 weeks to look at them.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Dust with the rest of the group and get that practice. Thank
great.
You for your time.
Well, I appreciate
thank you.
You. You're doing all that work. That's what we've been trying to do. Yay.
Acceptance of meeting minutes from December 4, 2019. We had some conversation internally about treasurer's report formatting and very small number adjustment.
Did it get fixed?
It got fixed, yeah.
A little bit?
It got fixed. It looks fine. The formatting looks fine.
Yeah, actually, I'm seeing looks better.
The context of the meeting minutes, the topics discussed, follows my agenda notes. So if you guys want to take a couple of moments to review... And whenever you're ready.
I mean, we'll be talking about some of this in old business,
yes.
right?
Yes. And whenever we're ready, a motion to minutes as written.
Nothing jumped out at me except for the chief's meeting discussing the VRBO vacation rentals, in short-term rentals.
I think we're following up.
Is that? Pardon me?
I think we're going to follow up with that tonight. Is that correct?
Yeah. So Mountain Chiefs was the BCFFA Mountain Chiefs.
So all of them are, this is happening everywhere, just not here?
Correct.
And what's the Mountain Chiefs' concern?
I'll discuss it once you approve the minutes.
Okay. That's the only thing that stuck out to me, so I'll so move.
All right, motion to approve meeting minutes, December 4, as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Jim, the meeting minutes passed 4-0. Treasurer's report.
As of December 31st, 2019, in the general fund, $306,788.37 in savings, $18,908.11 in checking, capital reserve of $24,667.10 for total funds of $350,363.58. In total reserve, we have a total of $241,186.91, which consists of capital reserve, grant match reserve, reserve for payroll operating, reserve for sick and vacation, reserve for water systems, reserve for Tabor, and a little bit for wildland fire reimbursement. Expense not paid of $21,000, and we have total unreserved funds of $88,006.55.
Thank you, Nathan.
And you're going to tell us how it compares to last year?
Yes, I am. They look back to 12/31/2018. Our total funds were, at the same time last year, $253,731. So we put some money in the bank, which is great. Total reserves last year were $177,330. Today's $241,186.91.
What was last year, I'm sorry?
$177,330. And there's going to be a discussion coming up with the chief about the reserve and our total... expense not paid last year were $15,950. Our total unreserved funds last year were $60,451 as opposed to the $88,006 this year. Couple questions on the check register that I saw. We made a payment to Boulder County in the amount of $527.76. I could not find that in the income and expense statement. Do you remember what that was for?
No.
$527.76.
Without more detail, I can't tell you.
I saw we paid the life insurance. On the December income and expense statement,
We had an additional donation of $896 in December.
Kathy would have taken it directly, so she didn't.
Seems like an odd number, but good for us, right? We had term life insurance we paid. Overall payroll expenses in December budgeted was $54,410. Actual spend was $54,864, so tracking within 0.84% of our budget. Total administration budgeted $61,170. Actual paid $61,705. Again, tracking within less than a percent of budget. Fire equipment, we had an expenditure of $1,340.
You have to give me more than that.
That's all I get, man. All your equipment out is $1,340. There was no corresponding...
On the check register?
No. This was an income and expense statement. I did not see a corresponding entry in the check register, so I could not follow that. So it must have been something else. That's fine. Just something I noticed. And on the year-to-date overall... just a couple numbers that actually stuck out, which is good to review. We had a budgeted income of $862,300. We actually collected $887,000, so we collected $25,030 more than budgeted. Part of that, big part of that, is the DDA share that we did not budget for, $20,034. So. A lot of the smaller line items were under budget, like bank treasurer's fee, total dues and subscriptions, total insurance was under. Office supplies was way over, but that's too small of a line item to worry about. Fire inspection was a little bit above budget, but I think we corrected that in the 2020 budget. Total payroll taxes were under budget. Total payroll expenses were within 2% of the budget. Station 1 building maintenance, we spent $14,000 versus our $9,000 budgeted, so kind of went over that by 63% building maintenance.
Yeah, we knew that.
That's the doors?
Total.
Primarily?
Couple doors. And Station 1 is where anything that we buy that Kathy can't figure out goes.
Right. Yes. Total administration, we actually did great. We had $675,900 budgeted. We spent $687,000. So we overspent technically by 1.6%. Medical supplies were a big line item. We spent 44% more than we budgeted. But overall, meals, eating good. Training, we spent more money. We had 97% more on our net income as budgeted. Part of that is that DDA fund. Grant income was $94,000 versus $30,000 that we assumed. Grant expenses corresponding were $115,000 versus $72,000. Makes sense. And we wrote a net income year to date of $62,195 as opposed to $7,864 in December of last year. So I think the report confirms pretty much that the budgets we're preparing and the chief's preparing that are pretty much spot on, with a couple small exceptions, which I think we took care of in the 2020 budgets.
Okay.
All right. Any discussion on the reports, numbers?
I think we've discussed it, but why do we have why the surplus? Is it just grant and DDA for the most part?
So DDA was $20,000 additional income.
Right.
Other is just unspent line items. Mm-hmm. However, we...
That was part of your chief warning that I got here?
Like, for example, contingency to reserve, right?
Yeah.
We had $10,000 budgeted for a contingency. We didn't use it. So
right.
It becomes
got
unspent
it.
Money.
Yep.
Becomes
so the big line items here. Okay, so for me, the income and expense year-end, I was showing $66,695 as net income. And I had Kathy move $25,000 on the balance sheet into grant match reserve,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be the money to pay for the extrication equipment. And so, in fact, Charlie's going to go grab
Or not.
We've received one of the tools, which wasn't expected till March. But long story short, we have that deferred liability to meet
right.
half
okay.
that.
I thought that some of this was just being pushed from last year to this year.
Right. So it's on the balance sheet.
Okay.
So it's reduced our total unreserved, but it is not reflected in our year end.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's
okay. So you got that line number one. With the increase in budget last year, I thought, you know what, I'm going to go look at that Tabor reserve. And so just to make sure that you guys are in the loop, I'm going to have Kathy move 9,600 to Tabor reserve to get us to 3% of total anticipated budget.
Yep.
And then I went through and I looked at our income and expense by month. And so if you remember, in our total reserve for payroll operating, we're at 56,000. And January, February of 19, we had a total expenditure of 91,000 in the hole, and 10K of that was the engine one repair. So if we could defer that, and so long story short, my recommendation to the board is to then transfer an additional 24,000 into reserve for payroll and operating to put us in an even 80K. And currently payroll for 19 is 36 to 38,000 per month. So with expenses, 80K isn't an exorbitant number to cover our first 2 months.
Right. And then that 80K is gonna get accordingly adjusted again after our first tax income revenue.
That's correct. But my point is that we keep that reserve to show fiscal responsibility. And then adding Henriksen's inspector position, mm-hmm. We may have some additional sick and vacation. Kathy typically calculates that out at the end of the year, and then she'll adjust reserve for sick and vacation liability end of year. So that number may go up, may go down. And so then, as far as I can calculate it, our 66,000 year end becomes roughly 7,000 after we transfer reserves. And that will just remain in the unreserved thing, and realize that January we still have bills coming in for things ordered in December, so she's still going to post that to the December budget. So our final number isn't there yet.
How much are we increasing the Grand Match reserve by?
So it is at 25, and she's reflecting that.
Okay.
Okay. So then we're going to add 9,600 to okay. Tabor. And we're going to add 24K to payroll operating.
Is our reserve for building, maintenance, et cetera, indicated in the capital reserve?
So then, capital reserve is the money that we rolled into that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the discussion will be that the remaining 7K at the mm-hmm. end of the year, are we going to leave that as an unreserved fund line item? And currently we're showing 88,000 there minus all the stuff I've done. So mm-hmm. unreserved is coming down by 59,000. And ballpark, we're going to end up with 30 in unreserved. Okay, so 7,000 surplus cash at the end of 19,
mm-hmm.
30 in unreserved. And the question is, do you then want to dedicate some of that to capital reserve?
Absolutely.
Yes.
In my opinion, yeah. It's got to be to capital reserve.
Yeah.
But what I would say is we have time to do that, and February is probably the right time to do that. So once Kathy flushes out remaining December expenses,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. then that's how.
Well, because we have the ability to use that reserve for what we believe is, I mean, it's not.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get to that.
Well, we're also trying to hold on to that for some unforeseen.
Well, that's where I'm going.
Emergency
right.
that.
Right.
Blows us right out of the water.
Actually,
right.
A bigger
but,
number as we
but
move
20
forward.
Budget, we have 72,000 allocated in capital slash
and
grant
so March,
match.
March, April, somewhere in there, we start seeing.
But just point is that we have a line item for 72K
yeah.
towards capital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right, and that's right.
So
no, because I think our future thoughts is that number needs to be
Needs to continue to grow.
Needs to be six figures.
Needs to continue to grow. Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay. All right. We're all in agreement on that.
So you're going to have Kathy make those changes to
correct.
Our
balance sheet.
Balance sheet. And then, yeah. I agree with that.
Okay. All right. Chief's report. I think we're seven calls year to date.
How many did you end up last year?
Do you want to get to it?
Oh. 435
is the direct answer.
Okay.
And we're going to look at the comparison. We had a couple significant calls end of year, and then into this year we have CPR at Eldora with return of circulation. We flew the patient. I don't know that they ultimately survived, but it was a pretty intense call. And then we have a local CPR, well-known person who did not survive, and so, yes, you guys know that. And I am saddened to report that former Netherlands firefighter Warren Shelley was found dead at the base of a cliff in Washington State.
Oh, my God.
And he had been undergoing brain cancer treatment and returned to some significant family turmoil. And it is unclear if that was accidental or suicidal.
Warren.
Yeah. He has a picture of that cliff where he was found at on his Facebook page.
No.
So my sense is it may not have been accidental. So we're all pretty sad about that. I know his wife and kids have a GoFundMe site, and that's all I know. So, anyhow. You all, many of you, I'm sorry, were not in attendance for the awards dinner. So I just wanted to kind of recoup 19. You know, we had the 5601 repair. We got some Bendix King radios. Mm-hmm. Charlie did a great job building 5631. We successfully got the extrication tool grant. We set up an office for our fire inspection program. We received DDA funding. We successfully received admittance into the community planning and for wildfire assistance grant. Abramson became a PIO. We, it would appear, did a helicopter transport of two significant cardiac events because of the Boulder Canyon closure. Jan Hartland passed, and we honored her at the awards dinner with a Lifetime Achievement Award. Our neighbor across the street passed. We had an escape campfire at West Mag that we successfully contained. Multiple CPRs last year. Timberline had multiple structure fires with fatals. Participated in three prescribed fires. We had our above tree line National Guard winch out call first in Boulder County. So those are some of our big 19 events. Fred Fialco responded to 157 calls, 36%. Andrew Joslin, 33%. Eric Abramson, 33%. Volunteer attended trainings was Joslin, Fialco, Reinhardt. That's funny. I don't know that that's a percentage number, but certainly that's their order. Fred also distinguished himself with 895 hours of shift standby time. Oh. We actually believe that number is much higher because apparently Jim lost a quarter of it. George Newell also gave us 500 hours of standby, and so those have been pretty impressive. Joe Luna got Firefighter 1, Fred Fialco Fire 2, Luna got an EMT, he got an EMT IV, Vanola got his CPR instructor, Newell got flight medic. Reinhardt went to 130-190. Luna got his Faller A. Roberts got his live burn instructor. Vanola got state proctor. And Henriksen got his fire inspector 3. We gave a Rookie of the Year award to Joe Luna. Bill Baumgartner celebrated 20 years of service. We recognized him. And we had a significant customer service award to Fialco, Robert Schmidtman, Joslyn Kehoe, and Vanola. We had a neighbor over here with multiple medical problems, but more importantly, it looked like a homicide scene, and these guys went in and cleaned up the blood there, so they did a pretty great job on that. So that's kind of a 19 in recap.
Also wanted to add to that that it was in addition to Baumgartner's 20 years of service, it was also Chief Durst's 20 years of service.
As a chief,
and we thank him for that as well.
So... As far as grants, this week I've been working on closing out the new brush truck. Of irony is that Don Sandoval, who's worked for Department of Local Affairs, is apparently retiring today. And I sent him a formal request. In the grant, it defines our service area as district and mutual aid. And I went ahead and asked the question, can we send it out nationally on dispatch during times of low fire danger? I expect a negative response on that, but I sent it out. And so
all you can do is ask.
That's correct. That discussion, and likely, I believe, his successor will field that.
So we can't fly to Australia?
That's correct. I cannot fly that truck to Australia. We've got one of the extrication tools, and if you guys would remind me before the end of the meeting, I'll bring it in and show it to you.
Okay? We can get cookie crumbs in it?
Yes. We have a meeting with the Sugarloaf chief, which was kind of an impromptu thing today, discussing the grants that Sugarloaf is pursuing going forward in 20. And we had somewhat of a robust discussion about UTVs and whether that is a potential direction for our district. The bigger version of an ATV.
Oh, side by side.
Oh, side by sides.
So he's currently doing the Can-Am six wheel, 27,000.
Where would you take that vehicle?
West Meg, Caribou Ranch Open Space.
505.
Better than just ATV though, man. Because 505, it's kind of narrow.
We had that teepee fire that Sugarloaf was able to get in with their side-by-side that we had to hike in.
Sugarloaf got rid of their ATVs because of safety hazard, but they've got a 25-gallon tank on theirs, I believe, and they rolled it twice in total.
Well, on an ATV, I believe that, yes.
Mm. So, they do...
Side-by-sides are, at some point, that's probably...
They do have a John Deere mule that they're going to be getting rid of, but he
recommends... that's only essentially a two-wheel drive vehicle.
So carrying water?
Yeah.
It's got a small tank in it. Actually, I think that's what they brought in that night.
But their recommendation is save your money and get the Can-Am. So we'll look at that from a grant perspective.
How much have we used our ATVs?
I'm sorry?
How much have we used our ATVs?
Not a tremendous amount, but I believe the necessity for the capability of them is a big deal.
But when we've used them, that's the only thing that we could have used.
Yeah.
What about the skid? We use the skid tracks?
They certainly are training on them. We haven't had a ton of wintertime calls in them, but I think they're pretty important to what we're doing. And I think the snowmobiles, I am grateful that we have them in case we gotta have
right.
them. But they're not great.
I tell you, have we had any calls up Caribou for all this crazy skiing? I mean, it's a ski area up there now.
Yes, it is. Not yet.
Yet is the answer.
That's correct.
Okay. It's insane.
What?
Besides me just going up there and sledding with my kids, there's like...
It's a circus.
100 people up there skiing every weekend, skinning up there. There's like moguls up there now.
On the open face...
Yes.
Yeah, you go past.
Up to Anchor and
up to Anchor, yeah, and then you skin up. No, it's okay. It's good skiing, though.
So anyhow, we'll have the discussion from a what's the direction of the district on whether a UTV is in
that. Would be the skid tracks probably to get up there.
I'm meeting with AMR and some other county people on the 16th to about to say it, discuss a grant for the Lucas Thumper, and a new monitor. Our monitor, ironically, our newest monitor, has a product recall, failure to deliver shock, and we're working on getting that fixed.
Oh, my.
That is not an inexpensive fix, we learned last board meeting.
Yeah.
Well, for this, the recall they should cover, but anyhow. I just went to the DDA meeting.
Well, wait a minute. Whoa. Is this the one that you said is at its service life?
Yeah. No, the 15
is
good.
This is a different one.
That's correct.
This is the new one. This is the good one.
Yeah, the new 20-year-old one. I just went to the DDA meeting to discuss their donation to the fire department.
Donation?
and justify how we spent their money last year and how we're going to spend in the future. The presentation went well. The one board member who voted against it last year happened to be present this year and requested for discussion at the end of their meeting tonight. I would fully expect for them to reissue that check for $20,000.
Are they going to vote on that tonight?
That's correct.
Okay.
How many people are on that board?
Should we go?
Just out of...
They have a 9-person board with 5 present.
That's fine. It wasn't, I don't even want names. I was just curious how many people are on the board.
They've had some turnover there. Charlie is busy working on 5631. We still have some minor things, the tank level gauge being the most problematic, and so we're going to work on that. He fixed Command 2 with the headlight switch problem. I've got no news from Boulder Fire on the inspector vehicle replacement, but you can bet your buttons I'll let you know as soon as I got some options.
Mm-hmm.
And that might take care of the rest of your money from 19, not having to roll that into capital replacement, because I'll be spending it on capital replacement. So I would expect that to be the $4,999 thing. Okay. We still have considerable outstanding radio programming effort for the radios to talk to Eldora and the school district. And I'll talk to you about some of the reassignment of tasks here shortly. And then this year we will again receive more programming from Boulder County. And Sugarloaf is putting in a repeater. But long story short, we're going to have to reprogram our radio we own, and that's considerable effort, and that's occurring seasonally now.
I always wanted to know, who's paying for the repeaters?
Sugarloaf is. They are a grant from Dr. Scholl's Footwear, $30,000.
Nice.
And the repeater cost? No, it's got to be at least a 50% match.
So it's fully funded. And originally, they were going to put up a tower, and they got so much grief on not in my backyard that they're putting the antenna on the side of the station. So they have considerable money left over.
I'm still somewhat flabbergasted that the county just expects us to reprogram our radios without helping us pay for the new radios or the new programs.
How it goes. They do provide assistance once they get all their shit done.
Right.
You can write him a letter, Henry.
Charlie, Ryan, and myself went through our CPR instructor renewal process in December, which is
arduous at best.
Correct. Schmidtman is going to the National Fire Academy Supervisor School at the end of the month, and originally we had slated Abramson to go to that also, but he had to back out. I plan on attending the Daniels Business School Public Safety Leadership Development Program. And I've been trying to get into that for 3 or 4 years, and provided there's still slots open. So that's a 3-day in February, another day in March, and another day in April.
And where is that?
Down at Daniels Business School.
That's in Denver?
Denver. And the short version is, so Dave Booten went to that, and a number of other folk. And the stuff that you as a leader suck at, they make you do. And so there's a number of pure content stuff, but some would accuse me of not having a hammer in my leadership toolbox, and so they will be installing a hammer or something like that.
Or a feather duster.
Some version of that.
How much do those classes cost?
They're all variable, but the Daniels is $1,850, and that's part of my training contract with the $2,000 tuition reimbursement.
Is that at the Daniel building, or is it?
I don't know.
How about the supervisor?
Yeah, the supervisor.
$50 plus lodging.
And where is that?
Grand Junction.
Car hotels are cheap in Grand Junction.
They are.
10th Street from cheaper. He's got a camper. Wait, Forerunner still move?
We discussed that, and I'm choosing to not make Schmidtman camp in January.
Is your Forerunner moving?
It was like 19.
No, okay. Oh, it is moving
today.
No.
Yeah, it was 19 in Grand Junction today. Charlie's not going to freeze his ass.
We're actively looking for 2020 to significantly improve the training calendar and offerings provided. And so we have the yearly calendar over there to get a visual understanding of training overlap. And so we put down our shift days. Charlie put in all the wildland fire courses that are offered. We're writing down all of the fire academy courses that are offered. And so the issue we have is we have some people that like to go play at fire academy, live burn days, and it's valuable training. It's good for them and it's good for us, but it's not very well recognized in the current structure. It seems, I guess one philosophy is that it's for people, it benefits them individually and maybe less for the department. It's a long story. If you were looking for a job and to make some contacts, it's a good way to do that. But the point being is trying to develop department appreciation for the outside training while still having people participate in company level drills. And so that's one of the hardest things that we're trying to figure out. And that's the survey speaks to some of that. We're looking at doing a driver training program, and there's a couple certifications of that, as well as company officer training. I've contacted Boulder Fire. They're going to give me their officer training task books. Unfortunately, I reached out to Mark Feely regarding driver training to see if he would guest instruct for us, and he's declining to do so. And so the intent to offer driver training, so I can get proctors for it, and we can schedule the state tests once they're complete, and there's two levels. There's how to drive it, and then there's a pumper, and then there's an aerial. Technically, there's three. So I'm not worried about getting the testing done, but I would like to start pulling in outside instructors, and our training budget might get crushed by this, but the goal is to bring some outside folks in.
The insurance company used to offer driver training.
And so I talked to the insurance company about driver training, and...
All right, so we think alike.
They are going to provide us... They have some online training app, and they give you 4 administrator IDs, and then you can register members for training. And so officers will in the future be working on member development plans, and the goal is for the shift officers to then assign online training. The insurance company may provide an instructor-led driver training program, but they have quit it mostly because only one department per year has been taking advantage of it. So,
yeah, because they used to send somebody up here. Was it an all-day Saturday thing?
It's when we were with VFIS. So I'm working on that, but certainly driver training. Chime in, Ian, at any point, has been identified as a need of the department.
DFPC had their simulator. Yeah, I think it's down in the training center, and then if they come up here, there's obviously that hike down to the training center. It's just
right. So they've got a simulator, and it's supposed to be pretty cool, and there is a simulator instructor course. I don't know if anybody here has been to it. I have not. I don't think it replaces what we're trying to do up in the Eldora parking lot. But, so anyhow, working on driver training.
We're driving up to the top of Eldora.
We have 3 applicants, and at least some of those are showing up. And our mentor program is still incredibly loose, with no one in charge and no direction. And we will be managing that ad hoc as best we can until we come up with...
So does that mean a new applicant does not have a mentor directly?
So we're working...
Or only kind of.
So we're working on redistributing... So each member, if you look over on the board, they have an A, B, C, or D, and they're currently assigned to a shift officer. The Ds are direct reports to me.
And we tried to divide that up between experienced members, new members, gave everybody a hard-to-manage member, and we are going to revisit that list and redistribute, assign the three to their shift level officers, and the current version would be that the shift officer would assign them a mentor out of the group of people they manage. So shift officer will work on member development plan, oversight, but hopefully they have a mentor in their group, or they will develop a mentor in their group to manage applicants. So that's currently the plan, but subject to change based on further input. So we're working on shift assignments and member development plan. Long range, station 1 and 2, I'm pretty frustrated with the lights. And as example in this room, I can buy a bunch of fancy LED replacement bulbs, and then when the ballasts work, fail, none of it works. Or we can pull all the ballasts and replace them with direct replacement LED lights. But as example, the quote to fix the rotunda, four light fixtures, is $1,400 with LED replacements. Okay. Station 2 has older T12 8-foot bulbs, and so considerable effort is going to get spent on station lighting, expense and effort. And so just know that that's coming down the course.
Can I just throw something in there for a second? I replaced all the lighting in my workshop with direct replacement fluorescent. The ballast blew up and took out $30 of LEDs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's worth considering
pulling the ballast, although it's labor intensive.
Yeah, just do it all.
Yep.
That was very expensive.
Yep. You guys are familiar with my subpoena to testify for the horse barn arson. That trial has been extended. I've had to spend some considerable effort in continuing education because they will likely try to determine if they're going to qualify me as an expert witness. And what that means is my opinion counts as fact. And you wouldn't want to get disqualified as an expert witness, but it's a pretty big deal. Yeah. Okay, so I've got a bunch of hours in doing CE. The trial's been extended because his intimidation of witness trial is also extended. So, big deal. Important just reminding you that I'm doing that stuff because by state statute I'm required to do it here. So I got to get that experience. A couple days ago, we had a phone conversation with the Community Planning and Assistance for Wildland Fire. And I believe I sent you guys this document, and this is an MOU. Maybe I didn't.
You didn't.
Okay. So this was a grant that we competitively applied for. And annually they award 3 to 5 communities nationally.
You sent us the basic info on this a while ago when we got it. You said it got accepted. We got accepted.
We got accepted. Yeah. Rick and I went to a 2.5-day presentation at the St. Julian. Where Jack Cohen presented, the author of the Zone 1, Zone 2, Zone 3. The guy that wrote The Fires of 1910, Stephen Pine, and 35 other texts presented. Forest Service researchers presented. And a number of other former communities selected, such as Big Sky, Montana, someplace out in California. And the point of this organization is they come in, and one of the guys is a fire behavior analyst out of Canada. And the female part is from Headwaters Economics, and they look at your community's wildland fire preparedness from a land use code, fire code, WUI code, community engagement, capacity building, and a whole bunch of shit. And so we had our first phone conference with them. And at the end of this year-long process, they will come out with a recommendation for us in the town, not unlike a CWPP, but much more comprehensive, meaning you should adopt this code, etc. So the current discussion for us is centering around wildland-urban interface code, which can be euphemistically also called the forest health management statutes. So some places, because WUI code gives you the ability to go to private property and enforce mitigation. Many people don't like that, and so some towns have put that in statute instead of code as the Forest Health Initiative. And so they will have four site visits, and we're trying to determine the timing of all that.
So is that the town that puts those in, or is that the fire department that puts those in?
Yes. Both. Okay. So town statute, but in conjunction, and so then the town planning and zoning coordinator is part of our group of three working on this CEPAW thing. Mm-hmm. CEPAW is a signatory to the CEPAW agreement, and we're essentially a memorandum group.
So this as opposed to the CWPP that we did, what, how many years ago?
2011.
Feels old. 8 years, 9 years ago, right?
How?
What was that?
So as
how many of these have been done throughout the states? Do you know?
30.
How many communities took the recommendations to heart and implemented them?
That's part of what they talked about, and I don't know statistically what that number is.
I mean, a lot? Or is it? I mean, from there, it's all voluntary, so does everyone take bits and pieces of it? Or
as best people? They can implement. So what was interesting is the guy in, it's not West Yellowstone, but the eastern entrance.
Eastern entrance is, in state statute,
they have to have wooden shake shingle roofs and wood-sided houses. In their town statute for the historical look going into the national park.
That sounds like Cody.
And so he talked about the challenge of implementing that.
Red Lodge.
But my point being that it's a big commitment of time for me and Henriksen. We believe that there's going to be great benefit. There's going to be significant public engagement, meaning public meetings, selling home hardening, and the need for WUI code type intervention. So one of the common complaints, Big Springs residents, my neighbor's lot is a crap pile full of slash and dead this and dead that. What are you going to do? Right now, we don't have a lot of tools to do that, and so we're looking at that. But the difference between a CWPP and this is that we might, via land use planning, determine maximum buildability grade. We might better address that you can't put in a subdivision without a turnaround.
Is this going to impact our ISO rating in a positive way?
No.
We're pretty good right now.
Well, we will be. Yeah. We're not great. Right. We will be. But the point is the ISO doesn't really give a shit about preparedness, community preparedness.
They should. This is funded via grant.
They are funded via the Forest Service and a number of other partners. They don't give us money. Right. They lend us expertise.
Right. But we're going to invest a bunch of time and expertise on putting this together with them.
With a guy funded by the DDA.
Right.
And how many people from town join you in this adventure?
Cynthia currently with the town admin in the loop. Okay.
And this is not just going to die on some desk at some point when it's all like...
I would not expect so.
Okay.
I think, you know, I would say our goal was to slide 2018 IFC in unnoticed. Most significantly, the requirement for residential sprinkler inspection. And via this meeting, we have to be out in front of it. We got to have community meetings. Not everyone's going to embrace it, but we're going to have to spend a lot of time on it. One of the most beneficial pieces is going to be third-party vetting of the Big Spring egress route. And so I'm going to upload those documents. We've got experts. And so there's a guy from the, I'm sorry, gal, from Forest Service Wildland Research Station feeding me studies on community mitigation that have worked, meaning they went in and evaluated the mitigation effort post-fire and said, this did goodness or this didn't do goodness. And we have lacked access to that information in the past. So there's some pretty good stuff there. So since I'm on it, Big Springs egress has gotten significantly more difficult. It would appear that all five landowners have quit claimed some form of easement on the driveway. Town attorney is recommending that we will need to negotiate with all five parties, and one of those parties is listed as Aud Morstall, which would be the daughter of the frozen dead guy, who I'm not sure even still exists.
Wait, the town expects us to negotiate? No.
It's a joint effort. But I'm telling you, it's hard. I may need to enlist land use attorney and spend some part of my money on it, because I don't know that I agree with the town attorney on the negotiation piece. So letting you know that's in the pipe. Okay, that's Big Springs egress.
So when did they quit claim the?
I don't know. We did it. So we got a title search done, and there's a number of encumbrances.
Okay. So that wasn't recent.
Odds on it, so no.
I see you on here.
So, okay.
To be determined.
Boulder County Housing Authority, Calvary Chapel driveway is a freaking quagmire because of our need for a turnaround and pass through there, and Boulder County's jacking with it, so we're spending a significant amount of staff time on that.
So has that not been reviewed during the permit submittal?
Yes.
And?
They're saying...
we missed it, they missed it.
Some version of that.
Okay.
We are having a mitigation meeting with 4 Mile this coming Monday, Henriksen and I, to discuss their mitigation crew, funding, structure, etc. And we want to understand it as we enter into some of the CPAW stuff. Rick is working with county and town on VRBO, short-term rental regulations. And from the district's perspective and most of the other fire districts' perspectives, there are certain things like needing to post egress route, weather radio, copper landline, ability to register your phone on reverse 911, a first aid kit. And then our discussion was, if we lose power in the middle of winter and they took an Uber here, so they have no way to leave their home, and they're stranded with no power for 3 days. So some consideration on how we manage those impacts.
How is that different from any other hotel we have in town?
You have a person there. VRBOs, off-site, maybe out-of-state managers, and at the county level, there may be a requirement for a site manager, some guy or gal you call when shit goes wrong.
But isn't that already in place, the people that...
not required, no. You can rent your shit and go to Maui for a week with nobody for them to call.
Okay.
So those are all being talked about at the local and county level.
And the town's going to put that in place?
Working on it.
Okay.
Nicholas, in short, and I have these, actually I'll give you guys the stats here.
Oh, that's...
our call stack comparisons, and if you go to the back page, it roughly shows you how we compare the past 4 years. And I would assume that bump in 16 is Cold Springs Fire. There's a significant item on that, though. And in 16, we showed 12 structure fires. And
put that down.
Right, and the way that that affects us, Beth, is we only show three-year statistics on the Assistance to Firefighter Grant Program on structure loss when we're trying to ask for a new fire truck. And so 16 is going to slip off and won't be part of the 2020 data. And so that will negatively impact us on that. Okay?
It's really frustrating that 50% of our calls are canceled.
Sure.
In route, and then another 8% are canceled before in route.
I would tell you not inconsistent with...
Yeah, I mean, situation normal.
Other departments.
Yep.
In our history.
Did we not have any data on unattended campfires in the previous years? I'm hard to imagine that we had zero.
Jim was entering them under a different class code, and so they were coming out under good intent calls.
Or unauthorized burning.
So it wasn't coming out as unattended campfire.
Okay.
So we fixed that. I don't know what it was prior to 6, because you can actually see where it's 6321. And I don't know what he was rolling it up. It was rolling up under unauthorized burning.
Bruce, ask me what is information.
We provide all of this data to the state of Colorado as part of the National Fire Control System.
And they are providing you the line items to track?
It is the NIFR standard data submission.
One smoke report?
Depends on how he codes it.
Okay.
The state got our 400 and, or I'm sorry, we got, FPPA got the state's check for $4,500, which is the state's contribution into the volunteer pension fund, and Ober Breckling started collecting his pension this past month.
Such an old man.
Rick has done a lot of work on the 2018 fire code adoption. Realize that there's two versions of that. There is the district version and the town of Nederland version, because they have differing appeal processes. And so that is in process, and I sent that out to you. And along with that, I am prepared to present. I think we can probably share this. I also have it available online. I'll see if I can bring it up. A proposed construction permit fee schedule and operational permit fee schedule. And those are going to likely occur with our adoption 18 code.
Right. I mean, I reviewed those, and there seems to be some inconsistency on the language used on some of this stuff. For example, building core and shell versus commercial building. Unclear.
So. Are you looking at the current document that Beth has?
I'm looking at what
the one that got sent to us.
No, I'm looking at the one that you sent out later this afternoon, version 2-2.
I gotta say it. Because that shit's unreadable. Okay. So we put that into English, and so ignore the man.
It wasn't unreadable, it was just incoherent.
Thanks.
All right, so what we're looking at, when did you issue that?
Later in the day. Later that very same day.
this already makes a lot more sense.
Thanks. And so, really, there are two items to discuss. And Henry, this is where I need your input. Is under commercial, currently that would include submittal fee with a plans review, rough and final inspection, and the assumption is that is alarm and sprinkler. Okay? And we have that earmarked at $500 plus 2 cents a square. However, in the example of the BVSD school bus maintenance garage, they added 1,000 square feet, and we told them they got to put in 2 heat detectors. That is not worth a $500 fee. And so our discussion is, do we break that down to $250 for alarm system, $250 for sprinkler, or how do y'all do that in the construction world?
We pay the fee that's required even for 2 sprinkler heads or 2 detectors. It's going to be expensive.
Okay, and so what Henry was looking at is the Excel spreadsheet showing comparison with a number of other districts. Mm-hmm. And so I assured the DDA we're not trying to be a profit center, but we do need to recoup our inspectors' cost. And so that is... I would like to get consensus on that, and that doesn't need to be tonight, but I wanted you guys to understand it. And so at the residential level, it's only the plans review for your sprinkler system. However, if you keep jacking us around, well, I want to put it here, I want to change the driveway here, I want to move it there, at some point fees are incurred. And on the subdivision review, we're still trying to flush that out, but there is a meeting tomorrow with a developer in town limits who keeps jacking us around on driveway to 3 structures. And I don't want to put a hammerhead in, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And right now he's spent no money on us and is sucking the lifeblood out of us. And so subdivision review... that'll allow us to recoup some cost. And then all of the fees on commercial and commercial remodel are pretty standard.
I'm
guessing that subdivision is off peak to peak.
No, that subdivision is just west of Stinky Gulch. Across from St. Rita's up on the hill, next to Emmerling.
Oh. Well, that doesn't surprise me either.
Oh, you mean that?
For you.
That thing that's going in behind Emmerling?
Yeah. But they're actually coming in from the street further up for an additional 3 lots.
Yeah, they're coming in from 5th.
So that's an example, and then not long ago we had the cluster of 5 houses put in across from Indian Peaks on the other side of
128 or
and that was a difficult process, a lot of staff time and et cetera. So again, another subdivision impact group.
So that's that.
And of course, we want to have these fees finalized by the time the town and us we adopt the 2018 IFC.
Yep. And then operational permit fees. Again, we're not currently billing. Ironically, the dude in the DDA said, well, how's your fee structure on? And I'm like, it doesn't exist. And so the only other thing that Nick and I are arguing about
is food truck fees. I'm pretty happy with the other things in here, but if 5 different food trucks show up for Ned Fest, what is a fair and equitable version to bill them for that inspection? We are required to permit them. We can exempt it, but we do as we expect to adopt it. And that's a big number in Boulder, like 250. I initially proposed 25, but I'm not convinced that adequately covers it.
I think we need to separate the food trucks between people that have a hood and have an operation with an Ansel system or somebody that just has a microwave in the food truck. Different inspection.
Well, if how they're, often would these...
If they're non-Ansel and they're cooking out under their tent with their electric fry pan, that's not a food truck.
Right.
No,
right.
How often are these, like, for example, how often, like, the Veggie Express is up here, you know, at the brewery every other weekend. How often are you going to be charging them $50?
That would be an annual operational, I suppose, in my understanding.
Because I don't want it to be, my question is, I don't want it to be impunitive.
Every time they serve a...
Exactly, yeah.
And there is movement at the FMAC, Fire Marshals of Colorado, to have a multi-county inspection agreement that you got inspected in Jeffco, and that's good for us. Mm-hmm. And so there's movement there, but I don't know anything.
No, that would be interesting, because I was talking to her, and she's like, she gets inspected like 50 to 100 times a year. Anytime she goes to an event, she has to get paid for it and get inspected.
So when you inspect a food truck, what do? You inspect it, and you issue them a sticker saying, congratulations, cook away.
Basically, most of those food trucks are cleaner than any restaurant.
More importantly, so the health department has all those things, but for us, it's a fire hazard thing.
Not the school districts.
Not the school districts.
And
because they don't get inspected.
Oh, no, and then the discussion was, what are you going to do if you find one that doesn't have their fire extinguisher? And
offer them up one.
Give them one and charge
no, them. No, tell them to go to Ace Hardware and buy one.
Okay, well.
I assume. So anyhow, but my question is, what are you going to do? They made the effort, they're here, they're set up, they're doing their thing. How are you going to mitigate that? So, but the goal is to get safety. My intent on outdoor assembly is not to impact things like the Netherland running race. That's a pretty minimal impact to us. Square footage on tents is 400 square, so 20 by 20 clearly. And but as we move into the larger events, we have to do the town site plan review process. Mm-hmm. It starts sucking some time out of us. Mm-hmm. And for certain larger events,
besides Frozen Dead Guy Days. Art fair?
There's the art fair.
Which, ironically, at the DDA meeting, she just walked in and asked for the DDA to fund all of their media postings, town security, and a bunch of stuff. And so she just came in and essentially, although it's a for-profit model currently, but she just asked the DDA to fund a bunch of that, just so you know. But my intent is not to stick it to the art fair either.
Right.
But there are requirements, like their tents have to be tied down for wind and stuff like that. So it actually is somewhat labor intensive.
Yeah.
But you get it. But our intention is to not go...
Is there any... Have you heard any talk, I'm totally tangenting here, whatever the word would be, of doing events up in Eldora in the summer that would trigger this for you and make your life harder? Just ask. Or you've heard nothing?
No, that's not true.
Eldora does do things.
So stand by. So they have an agreement, thank you, Charlie, with Boulder County Transportation that they won't have more than 5 summertime events per year as part of a cost share.
Okay.
Okay.
They haven't had any yet.
They had that big cleanup, the Subaru cleanup.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And we had a handful of vendor tents.
And food trucks.
And we actually provided standby EMS for a period of time because there was a thought people would fall down on the hill and need evacuation. And so we actually provided EMS coverage for them to a degree. Talking to ski area management, what they said, there may be a discussion long in the future where they relocate a backcountry trailhead to Eldora for summertime use. The discussion on mountain biking Eldora said they're not pursuing it, but if other entities ask them to do it, including Boulder County, they would entertain it.
Right.
But then, that is not part of their specific
vision.
Yeah. I know of nothing else. I know that DDA is currently working on the performance venue, and they're trying to plan where to put the power box and how they're going to build their structure and stuff like that down at the lakefront. Okay. So anyhow, just trying to get things in place for the future.
I'll review these against some other municipalities that we run into, just sort of like the... that we're not completely in left field with some of these.
And fireworks retail, the answer is no.
So
that's punitive.
So
sounds okay.
Loveland has on their permit fee bonfires are $350 minimum. Fireworks retail wholesale is $1,500 for the permit.
No.
I mean, $1,500 is a stick it to you number anyway.
These are permits that, we can choose to issue or not issue.
All right.
Okay. I'm just telling you, so it's out there. And so if we don't say $1,500, then it's $25.
Got it. And we can't just say no.
And it is permitted as part of Boulder County regs, apparently.
Oh.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, fine.
So
that's what we need. Roadside fireworks.
There is, however, movement afoot, and they discussed it with me tonight at the DDA, of doing a wintertime fireworks and laser show. And I said yay.
You don't have to laser show permit fee up there yet.
Yeah,
that
I guess
would be outdoor assembly.
Yeah, it probably comes under the 300 or more people.
Okay. So anyhow, that's all fire code stuff. I know, this is long. I'm actively working on the hat and hat artwork. And the one that I got done, I'm not... but it includes some of the ideas put forth. And if you can envision that without the white and without the circle... And then we will...
Which is all you see.
No, but now that I've spent a shitload of money on SurveyMonkey, we will put out 3 or 4 artwork designs and allow the membership to vote on the hat they like.
It's actually a good design.
It's closer. Yeah.
You're saying there's no weight and there's no circle?
Yeah, so imagine that. Red letters, green trees, a pond, and a cabin using the current emblem colors. But the view was, so some people want the emblem, some people want it to say Nederland Fire in text, and some people want something else. So we will work on a handful of artwork designs and let that be put forth.
I kind of like the circle and the white. I won't be wearing it.
Well, so. You can vote for that.
No, I won't be wearing
it. I'll make sure I include you in the distribution.
No hats for you?
Huh?
No hats?
Are we going to circle back to the responsibilities and assignment line items?
The one right above that.
Apparently. Where the hell are you?
I mean, I read those, and they seem reasonable. And
So we had a fairly spirited discussion, and so in relation to some of the emails from last month, I've looked pretty hard at continuity of operation and delegation of authority and what's this place look like when I'm not here. And so we went through, and Charlie and I, and we looked at areas of responsibility. And so part of that obviously was the battalion order of members, member development plans, and splitting that as we talked about, but then also of primary responsibilities. Mm-hmm. My goal, although I have a draft here, is to have an officers' meeting to discuss that. And so none of this is cast in stone. Do you want me to pull that up, or do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No, you sent us the email.
Okay. And I think it will share the workload burden better of both administrative and non-administrative tasks. I don't think it's perfect, but I think that we as an officer corps need to come together and have that discussion.
I mean, these areas of responsibilities, I don't think they're solely for the instance that when you're not here. I think these are going to be responsibilities even as you know, if you're around. I mean, these are responsibilities that you are delegating to the captains.
Correct.
Not just when you're gone.
Correct.
Right. Thank you.
And I think that battalion level thing, that gives them a certain sense of destiny and control. And there is clearly a group that would like some of that. And I'm happy to delegate it. I just have to delegate it fairly.
Right. And I think with all delegations, there's going to be, you know, your job's going to be on following up and managing the results of that.
So I guess my version of what I see that to be is that I'll begin getting committee reports from each shift officer. So this is the status of structure fire, this is the status of EMS, this is the status of wildland fire.
It's below the second red one, just above the second, right, yeah, right above that.
No,
that one. Down.
One more there.
There.
Clearly there's other things, but right now, if you were to ask me, you know, so if I'm unhappy with Station 2 maintenance, you know, why is it an effing mess? I really got nobody I can put a finger on.
Mm-hmm.
And they desire a little autonomy in making it not a mess. And so there certainly will still be some direction on that, but I believe we can do some stuff there.
So you said that you and Charlie worked on this, but the other guys haven't seen all this yet?
That's correct. And it's not, to be honest, new. We did it 3 years ago, and everybody got a station, and some people got trucks, and somebody got areas of responsibility. But really, the failure's been mine to monitor it.
Well, there's some responsibility or failure for them to do it.
Whatever. I think the nice thing is that shift, whatever shift it is, so let's take a shift.
Okay, so Ryan's going to be everything wildland. Ryan's members that are assigned to him can complete his truck, monthly truck checks. They can complete his station one maintenance if that's how he wants to run his shift, or he can do it all. It just has to get done. I don't really care.
I mean, that's going to be interesting to supervise that process.
Thanks.
But it's not undoable. I mean, that's how a private company works.
I understand. It's the best I can come up
with. I mean, you try it.
It's the best I can come up with the skill set that we currently have.
You try it.
It is a reduction in responsibility for some of the existing officers. And I think they're going to feel slighted by that.
Yeah.
And that's not the goal. The goal is to even out.
Yeah, and get everyone
paperwork,
get everyone involved
and hard work.
Hard work.
And Charlie's been bearing the brunt of that.
And so what you said, it's a reduction in responsibility for who?
As example, Ryan has also been in charge of structured fire certification. He's currently the guy that interfaces with the state on the state website on structured certification. He has the highest level of training, meaning he has instructor one and his live fire burn instructor.
How many other volunteer captains do we have? Just Abramson?
Correct.
Is the only volunteer captain?
Lieutenant.
Do we have any other volunteer?
No. Go ahead.
Any other volunteer lieutenants?
We did. And he's present here tonight, and that would be up for discussion if that is something that he wishes to re-engage into.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Undescribed here is then future officer development and spread the blame, responsibility. And that is something that we will be looking at also.
All right.
And again, my goal with that, I told you, City of Boulder task force officer development.
I mean,
whatever else I can.
General, the more responsibility you can push in other places is better for everybody.
As Udo said, I want it where I just sit there with my feet up on the desk and watch everything hum around me.
Somehow I don't.
Yeah, I see how that worked out.
Yeah.
Worked out for Udo.
Yeah. Okay, so some version of that is the goal, and some version. Depending on Ian's presentation to the board and our actions based on that, we'll dictate an officer's meeting. And I initially thought that would be January, but maybe that will be February. But my goal is to begin implementation of this. And that's one of my, I guess, frustrations with membership survey is we can ask everybody how should we divide up the work. Or I can divide up the work and get it going.
Right. I mean, listen, I don't think you need to wait for board approval on some of these policies that you need to put in place to
keep
the entry going.
We will redo it if
right.
It's imperfect.
Right. And I think you come to the board with policies that are in dispute or that are issues and that you need further clarification on. Like policies that are good for the district and good for the membership.
Yeah,
you all put in place.
Understood. Okay.
All right. This was the officers and chiefs report in length.
And then I have new business once you get there.
Right. Old business, I think,
got there
by the virtue of going through the chiefs report. We pretty much discussed. Everything. I just had one question on, is there anything new on PILT? Any updates on PILT?
PILT is dead.
I
actually have two things. Can you send me a copy of that title?
I did resend you all that, but I will again. Yes, I will.
You may have sentenced me, but resend
what?
The stuff on the Big Springs egress, the encumbrance.
It didn't bounce back to you? I never got it.
Yeah, it got sent. I never got it.
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
I didn't send it to all of you because I figured most of you don't want to read easement language.
You only sent it to an Apple laptop.
I'll be curious just to see.
Yeah, no, I need your help on it because it's a shit pot.
I feel like months or years ago there was mapping software stuff going on. Does that ring a bell to anyone, or did it all get dealt with?
So...
Uh-oh.
No, it's okay. So, Savoy went and...
Oh, boy.
...installed various mapping applications onto our iPads, and we have an online mapping resource. Active 911 currently maps our routes to various calls with some occasional errors. We purchased...
How many Evergreen drives do we have?
Right. We purchased a PDF editor and began the process of updating our paper maps, which are in PDF format, with pertinent changes. And I assigned that to some people to carry forward, and it hasn't gotten any traction because from the list of shit going on here, there's a lot of shit going on here. Part of the membership survey is to ferret out how happy are you with online digital maps and how happy are you with paper maps, but it is my intent to complete the revision of the paper maps just by functionally editing the PDFs and fixing the addresses and things. The concept, so we still license ArcGIS.
Yeah, I was asking that. I thought there was some licensing or something we were trying to get installed somewhere.
We don't have the staff time to do it. I can't get it done, and Boulder County sees us and says, we're going to do something for you, and then they don't. And so it just keeps losing traction.
Plus, it is a very maintenance-heavy task. But
nothing wrong with the paper.
It's obsolete tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
make sure the paper ones are right.
Okay.
All right. Moving into new business, we talked about the DDA. We need to pass a resolution to appoint a DEO, designated election official. Elections are, board of directors elections are scheduled for May 5. People that are up for re-election, Nicholas and Beth on a 2-year term, and Cheryl Evans on a 4-year term. That's the information I have anyway. I think that is correct.
Correct.
So I think we need to vote on, or we need to motion a resolution because by January 15 it has to be filed with the county assessor, county clerk, or whatever.
No, that's our transparency notice.
Right.
Okay.
But it has to be filed by January 15, right?
Well,
doesn't it include the board elections?
Bear with me. So you need to appoint DEO tonight, and that resolution includes the ability to cancel the election if the number of seats and number of...
Right,
okay. So I have that resolution here, and I'll read that in a minute.
Yep.
The district transparency notice is required to be filed by January 15th.
Yep.
It is complete. It is on our website, and Jim will be mailing it to county clerk, assessor...
Treasurer,
and DOLA tomorrow. So I've got a copy of the transparency notice, and functionally what that does for you is says who's up for election.
So was that correct, Nicholas, Beth, and Joe?
Correct.
Okay.
The significant difference is that starting this year, in the near future, elections will be moving to odd-numbered years. And historically, what was a 4-year term is now a 3-year term. And so for subsequent elections, you will
choose either a 2 or a 3. And that's true in 2020 and 2022. I don't understand it. So Jim went to the class yesterday, the DEO class, and that's the word out of them.
All right. Would you like to read the resolution?
Resolution 2020-01 for the regular election to be held May 5th, appointing a designated election official and authorizing the DEO to cancel election. Whereas special district biannual election for board candidates of the Fire Protection District. Whereas you're authorized to designate a DEO. Whereas you can authorize the DEO to cancel the election. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Directors for the Nederland Fire Protection District. The Board hereby names W. James Harrison a designated election official for the regular biannual special district election scheduled for May 5th, 2020. The Board authorizes and directs the DEO to cancel said election and declare the candidates elected if at the close of business on the 63rd day before the election, 3/30/20, there are not more candidates for directors than offices to be filled, including candidates filing affidavits of intent to be write-in candidates, and the Board further authorizes and directs the DEO to publish and post notice of cancellation at each polling place and in the offices of the DEO, clerk and recorder of the county in which the district is located, file the notice with DOLA. In such event, the designated election official shall also notify the candidates that the election is canceled and that they were elected by acclamation.
All right. Any conversation about that, or are we
when
all?
When were candidates due? I'm sorry, you said it. I was reading.
I'm sorry. 63 days before.
Someone wants to run. They have to give notice.
February, March
1st, basically.
And
March 3rd.
Call for nominations, and then stand by. I'll tell you. Your nominations for submission must be by February 20th, I believe. And so for all of you that are up for election, you may file a self-nomination form. The call for nominations will be published January 26th and is open till Feb 20. Nope, I'm sorry. Feb 28 is deadline for notice of self-nomination and exception. March 2nd for write-in. March 3rd, cancel the election if seats equal applicants. Okay?
Y'all good with that?
Yep. Right.
Motion to approve resolution 20-001 as presented by Chief Durham.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Congratulations, Jim.
Thank you.
Right. We have a Colorado Open
Records Act request.
And since the department never had that, I think we are talking about adopting some
CORA records request policy.
Thank you.
And so talk to the district attorney about this. And so the request is for board meeting minutes, both printed and recordings, from October 18 through year end. We couldn't technically provide that until we approved the December minutes.
Right.
We have 3 days to satisfy the CORA request, except for the nature of we get a 7-day extension if it's too hard, is the short version. Okay. The request asked for board meeting minutes, current policy manual, insurance policies. And the kicker on this is financial accounting records, including supporting documentation for all line items. As far as I read that, that is all receipts supporting all purchases for an entire year. And so by this records policy, what it functionally says is anything greater than 10 pages of copying, I have to provide a receipt or provide an estimate for the production of those records. So it's 25 cents a page, it's $30 an hour for staff time to do it,
And so, anyhow, I sent you, did I send you guys the CORA policy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And this just provides the legal framework within our
organization
to provide that to the state or to the asking entity.
That's correct.
Right. I mean, there's nothing to it, really.
And so let's do A, approval of the policy.
Is that policy going to be part of our...
That's a personnel manual, not a district policy and procedure manual.
Right. So...
So we're going to call it the district CORA...
Thank you.
...policy.
Right.
Okay. And then that will be put on the transparency tab as part of the website.
And it doesn't have to be a resolution, it's just...
By motion.
By motion to approve.
Okay.
This is something that everybody else has.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. We just don't have it because we were never asked to do that.
I'm not even sure we don't have it. I went through this sometime in the past, but I can't find record of the formal adoption.
Yeah,
so remember when we did the records retention?
Right, 7-8 years ago. But that had nothing to do with CORE.
Right, but somehow I've been down this road before.
Right.
Okay?
The records retention was not. I looked at the records retention stuff, and there's nothing to do with that.
Okay.
All right, so present a motion to approve district policy for the CORA submittal.
Correct.
Submission as written and presented.
So moved.
Motion to approve.
Aye. So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
All right.
And then in regards to the specific CORA request.
So who's CORA?
Colorado Open Records Act.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So in response to the specific CORA request, I've made an attempt to contact the attorney twice and she hasn't returned my call. So I can't in good faith give her copies of every single receipt we have for the year.
Right. I think you want clarification on that, and if that's what she wants, then
okay. She can pay for it.
So I have electronic copies of everything else. I got all of our insurance policy stuff in electronic format, and so I've got that disk ready, and we will be sending the information to her. Essentially saying, we can't send you the financial records because I'm not sure what you want. And by the way, if we're copying a year's worth of receipts, it's going to cost a fair amount of money. And I somehow have to figure out how to estimate that. And I can tell you that's hard because it's a file drawer. And if Jim can scan 3 documents a minute, 5 documents, I don't know. I mean, it's hard.
I'm guessing that the wording in the request does not reflect what they really want. I mean, I somehow I highly doubt that they want zero receipts for all the purchases.
I don't know. But in answer to the CORA request, and consistent with your request in the past, my plan is to post all board meeting minutes up on the website. That's fairly... Yeah, it's hard. But I can do it. So I have all the PDFs. I have to create an individual link to each PDF by date. But that's the only way I know to do it, so I don't know how to do it by a file folder. And then obviously we are a month in arrears pending right. Approval of previous minutes. But anyhow, I've got 18 and 19 year to date in PDF format, and then my intent is to get that up over the next couple days. And so then they don't even need to do a CORA request. They can just pluck it off.
Right. I mean, there's still probably a request for financial support documents or insurance documents, whatever.
Right.
Did you ask Rob Savoy maybe to help you out with the thing that can do that? I mean, he's the computer whiz guy.
Sure.
Maybe he's got, yeah.
It's nothing unusual. All right. We talked about fire code. We talked about a couple of the other things. The only thing that is still on my new business, the 2020 survey.
Hold on. You're not there. I have one more item. And that's the update to the policy manual.
Oh, that's right.
So I was going through policy manual in section 2.8. When members become related or their working relationship falls within the policy, one member may be required to transfer to another available position. No person shall be employed, promoted to a position where he or she reports directly to another member of the NFPD with whom the member is related without board approval. Okay? So that statement was inconsistent with our development of the junior firefighter program sponsored by either a member parent. So the amendment is junior program membership is an obvious exemption to the above policy. Junior members are expected to be supervised by parent members when present. If a conflict arises from junior member participation, the matter will be brought to the chief for resolution.
Is there a precedence with other departments?
None known.
I think the only department who run into that, but
any junior members doing anything?
Lauren is the only current one sponsored, and she is in the process of getting going on her EMR, and we're working on the online S13190 through NWCG.
So she likes it?
It's a pain in the ass. She has a lot of other responsibilities. She may be here for ICE rescue training tomorrow, depending on school workload.
Right.
The whole discussion, and that's also in the survey, is you know that there's discussion at the high school about the tech ed program with a public safety curriculum, which would include law or EMS or fire. And it's my belief that the school district would want to partner with us on that. There was a lot of money, like $6 million tied to this Mountain Tech Ed Center. I don't know how far they've gotten, but the point is that they may well be coming to us.
Do you see any issues or conflict in regards with what we're trying to propose here in areas of responsibilities with the shift captains?
Beth?
Yes.
You want to answer that? From a historical perspective? I will tell you that I do not believe junior program is universally embraced. And if I had a shift captain that did not support that, that conflict would need to be resolved based on the board's authorization of the junior program. I would assume that is a departmental goal or policy, and so I don't know how the board would provide further clarification on that.
Why hypothetically wouldn't it be supported?
When I took Lauren on the wildland fire at West Mag, some people lost their shit because she was dressed as a firefighter in appropriate PPE, and what if I assigned her a task? Well, she's standing next to the guy in the white helmet. He wouldn't let you do that. Well, what if we killed her and she's under 18? Well, you're still in trouble if you kill people over age 18.
Or don't we still have something from the past?
We have.
Because we had some success with it.
Yes, I know that.
Surely we...
Do we not have a policy back when that was?
Oh, when we first started out, probably
none
not.
None of that
no.
currently exists. So that's why we had you guys formally authorize that program to get that back on the books.
I think we should. particularly, has there been any more chatter about what did Mr. Ellers, I mean, what was he trying to change the name of the school to?
Colorado Mountain Academy.
Yeah, there you go. Any more chatter about that?
So what I would tell you is that there is a sentiment among some people that we don't have the bandwidth to manage a junior program. And I would contend that our failure to manage a junior program might impact what our volunteerism looks like in 10 years. And so my intent is not to be a daycare.
No.
And I'm not, so again, that's the reason for departmental member sponsorship, right, and accountability.
Yeah.
And my willingness to assume that liability.
I'm 1,000% for it. I don't know whether it'd be problems, but it sounds like there are problems that I'm not hearing.
Yeah, and I haven't heard the other side of what the issues are against it.
I think the program by itself, it should be absolutely be part of what we do, you know, junior members. I think it's just a function of the supervision part.
I understand.
That has to be dealt, that has to be done right.
Yes.
So
we have that guiding document on participation.
Right.
And again, if the board has set that as a viable program within the department, then my expectation is that shift officers or volunteer officers would support that. Irrespective of whether it is my kid or your kid or Ed LeBlanc's kid with an appropriate sponsor.
Or none of the above's kids with an appropriate sponsor.
Correct.
Well, let's see. We did have some kids that
we did
had no ties to the fire department whatsoever.
And we quit doing that.
We quit doing it or they stopped coming?
No, I quit supporting it.
Oh, so you're the problem.
After the kid went to the high school and talked about Helen Prine being frozen on the toilet like a dog.
Oopsie.
So there was a reason that it was disbanded. I don't expect that to occur with this level of accountability.
So you're asking the board for a motion to approve this language and be incorporated into the
policy
manual.
That's correct.
Okay. Do we have to have any further discussion on that?
Does that make it an official junior firefighter policy accepted by the department, or is it?
That already occurred.
That already happened.
Right, that's already there. That policy already stands. This is just a.
Was there any discussion amongst the membership about that? How they feel?
There is questions on that on the survey.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm wondering if this should be held off until after we...
Well, I just know we had success in the past. Brooke.
So I will tell you that the official line...
And Tyler. I forgot about him.
No,
and he had no tie.
Is properly regulated and insured and has the support.
I mean, this that may be a function of a review of the program itself, but not of this text here.
Yeah, okay.
I think this text has nothing to do with the actual... I mean, it kind of creates a framework how we supervise some of that, but it does not address the actual function of the junior program.
Correct.
So, as on the, for the board, I would suggest we have that motion to approve this adoption of the language, and then if there's any other discussion about the actual junior program itself, then you know we'll address that in time.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
All right. So I'll prepare.
So you mean the actual implement getting it started?
It is started.
Well, it is started. It could be approved back in
So I propose a motion to adapt this additional language as proposed by the chief into our district manual via motion.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, so we'll add that to our policy, and if there's any further discussion about the actual program, we'll still, that's still to be had.
We need...
Cookie.
All right. See, you're on.
All right, well, membership survey was on the agenda. I think we circumvented that by Ian's request of submitting submitting his ideas or the on the membership to have ideas. I don't know, do we still need to go through the survey, review some of these questions, or should we table that for right now, review the written text first?
I'm okay either way.
220 questions is going to take 2.5 hours to review.
The last, there's about 15 questions per officer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of all the people on the staff, so it's the same question for Durr as it is for Schmidtman, as it is for Abramson, as it is for Roberts, as it is for Nola, as it is for Femmer. So there's the tail end of it.
On a personal note, on the survey, what I'm not a huge fan of are survey questions that can be answered by a range of like a 1 to 5.
All of your input was put into comment box format.
Yes.
And I believe there's a certain averaging of satisfaction with certain programs that is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there is more than enough opportunity to provide comment in every answer.
And do you understand what I'm saying? Some of these surveys are press 1, press 5.
So,
and whereas having the people that actually take the survey put some thought into it, input, actually write a paragraph.
I want words.
All right, you asked for it.
So I'm not doing the whole thing, but stand by.
I don't know if we should table it.
I think we should, but Nicholas, can I show you format?
If you must. Has it changed from what you sent us?
If you must.
If I must.
But to tell you the truth.
So as example, overall rate of quality structure fire training, and we have 1 through 5 with suggestion.
Right.
EMS training suggestion, 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 suggestion. Okay.
I think you get better answers if you just don't even have the bubbles.
But I want to statistically validate if everybody's pissed off. I mean, so everybody can have a comment about something. Okay. But I do think that there's some things. Okay. How well... I want to understand some statistical validity of the questions offered.
I get what you're getting at. The problem with these things is they distract people from what the real answer is.
But
the second you have those 5 bubbles to fit, you've already ruined comment. You've ruined them. If you make someone answer something every time, then they're going to answer something every time. It's not going to give you any statistics, so that doesn't do you any good.
But to some extent, I mean, I actually, I'm okay with having answers that are either very poor or very good. Because I think that's going to show us on some of these questions, really, what the membership thinks of some of the survey questions.
If you just have a comment, you're going to get a darn good idea what the comment is.
But sometimes that's harder to... Sometimes it's harder to actually get to put the comments into a simple, you guys suck, or you guys do great. Unless the comments are just like that.
The survey?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question, isn't it? Because like you say, a free-form comment, then these emails, and so 50 different free-form comments that you've got to interpret.
Right.
Different people's versions of language.
It just depends on whether your point is to go through this and fix the other or the point to go through the words to derive that.
So it depends on how you score the question. So I do a lot of, I've written a lot of questionnaires in medical field. And each of those questions is weighted in a specific way. Although the question is a 1-5 answer, it isn't 1-5.
Right.
5
to 11. Okay.
So historically, and I think the last time that we did this form, we did a paper version in 2005, I think. Mm-hmm. We did a paper version in 2000. And we reported the statistical average along with every individual comment for each question. And so I think we tried to accommodate both of those schools of thought.
Yeah.
Right? And so we could, as an example, how effective are education programs in school? And if good is equal to 4 points, and the statistical validation of that is, let's say, a 4.0 overall. However, there are 10 additional comments. Mm-hmm. Then that might be something that we address later. Right? Whereas the things that we're rating ones and twos, we better get on that. So that was my goal, to incorporate mm-hmm. both.
I mean, I think there is a purpose of still having these bubbles. It seems somewhat mundane, but I know that there's a statistical value to having that information.
Ironically, what I haven't done is validated the model to see how SurveyMonkey evaluates it, so they have some built-in tools.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it will automatically do averaging based on this. I know that it can, but on the type of answers that I chose, I don't know that it will. So that's actually, I'm going to be sending out the HAT survey and testing statistical modeling on that, or something else.
Well, like, I'm looking at these mm-hmm. questions right here, and it's like, I don't give a shit about the answer of any one of these questions.
Thank you.
You know, I don't care. This is not what I'm trying to figure out. What I'm trying to figure out is, why are we having problems keeping volunteers here, and why are people pissed off? So all this, like, I don't care. I know the public perceives us. We're idiots who drive around with lights on our trucks and we drive too fast. You know, so what? That's not affecting why people aren't coming here. So that's kind of my angst with the thing. I like to sit down with each individual member and say, what's your problem? What is your angst about? You know, what's pissing you off? And yeah, so let's get rid of the first 74 questions.
74 and 75. That's all I want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I think our department has a number of views
for 73
of different things. I would tell you that different individuals have very different viewpoints on very different things. That there may mm-hmm. be common issues that we all share, but I can tell you maybe somebody has a really strong interest in wildland fire deployment, mm-hmm. and maybe there's a chief with an interest in junior programs.
So, I mean, 220 questions can be discouraging for somebody to sit down and do that.
Yeah.
Again, in
40
for statistical values, I think there is
so Beth,
it's valuable, but
there is a tool that I need in this office, anonymous officer evaluations, mm-hmm. where if the chief says there is a behavior problem, a perception problem in management, that's just your opinion and you're a dick. And if 15 people say the way that you're managing is a problem for a particular officer, then there's probably a problem. And that can be me too. Mm-hmm. Okay, but what I'm telling you is that anonymous feedback to address some of the issues that I have
is valuable. The questions are not perfect.
Yeah. So you're talking about like a peer review, performance peer review.
Yeah. Okay.
I would like to put the whole questions thing, what kind of questions we're going to ask, kind of on an aside thing until we find out from these guys what it is we're actually
trying to fix,
rather than throwing 220 questions out saying, did we get it right? Did we figure it out? Which one of these? You know, pick five.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, let's...
That's fine.
Let's try to pare this down.
Gutting this thing to a quarter.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm telling you is there's
some benefits to some of this information.
There is mixed perception on management styles,
mm-hmm.
depending on who you ask.
Yep.
Same as any company.
Yeah. I mean,
everybody has an opinion in that way.
That's right. But again, I need to average it, and I need to provide comment. And so, Ian. Questions 119 and 120. This officer appropriately uses command presence and position of authority.
Right.
If this officer position was an elected position, I would vote for him or her. So I understand there's the potential for some negative feedback there.
Mm-hmm.
But that allows me to focus on an officer development plan and allocate resources, etc. Okay? And you know the issue I'm trying to ferret out. Okay? But what I need is more than Rick's opinion.
Yeah.
In general, the more, and I've seen this in auto service, the more question you have, the more answers you get, you actually are able to better prioritize your strategies and how to attack the areas that score low. Because if you don't do that, if you only have, let's say, five questions, well, hell, they're all priorities then.
And then, Ian, if you're just dying for this, because I know you have a version.
A version or a position.
Right. So Henry, I got all your stuff in there.
From the chatter that I hear, I mean, we essentially have two groups that we just have to pay attention to. The ones who are very active and the ones who are not active at all.
So
and that's what I want to know is why are the ones that aren't active at all, why aren't they?
And the problem is, you know, I think the way things are now, and I probably should be talking, but I'm talking anyway, are now has worked for these people for 10, 5, whatever, however many years, and so they don't want to cause any waves. So they get their t-shirt, they get their Christmas dinner, they get their license plates, whatever it is that they're here for, they're getting that. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other core group, you know, whatever Nicholas was saying earlier, the Dirty Dozen, or...
Mm-hmm.
You know, the top responders, and they're here and they're responding, but they have a certain amount of issues that they're trying to address.
So let me, I'm going to address some of that in a minute, Charlie, for you. And I know everybody wants to go home, but since we're all in this room, let's get this done.
No, I'm eating cookies, man. We can stay forever.
Okay.
I mean, an open stack.
So question 59.
59.
Okay. I know how some of you in this room feel about that.
Mm-hmm. We can take their shirt back.
And, right. And,
even in the way
of question 60 is the polar opposite. And I believe satisfaction lies in the middle. And question 61 speaks to that. Or 62.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's I totally understand that. I mean, that's the...
But, in defense, I went through response statistics, and outside of our reserves, Kate Durr, Rutland Schmidtman, Mike Smith, Anthony DeSalvo,
he didn't have 9,000 as station covers.
There are two members failing to meet call minimums at 6% and 7%. Two members failing to meet minimums.
At 6% and 7%.
That's correct. Of call response.
Where is that minimum?
10% is standard call minimum.
That's what is in our handbook.
And there are only two people outside of the reserve ranks that don't meet that.
Are those two people making training requirements?
One of them is affiliated with an outside agency and could be considered a reserve.
Okay.
And they're getting more than enough training hours.
Yeah, I'm just...
And the other one is not, however, is a long-term member and probably could be cajoled into adding 3% to their call minimum or being given an equivalent of nighttime standby. Sign up for either shift coverage or one night a week or whatever the shit it is.
I mean, the last thing you want to do is penalize a member or volunteer that's trying, doesn't quite get to the call minimum, and tell that person, like, well, sucks for you.
But for the people that are consistently making double and triple call minimums, they're frustrated by the member not making minimums.
But this is, in a way, this is still a volunteer department. I mean, when I ran calls, I couldn't do any calls during the day. Because guess what? I wasn't up here, I was working.
Yeah, but you ran the shit out of the night calls on there.
Well, I know, but it's... But I got lucky, there were night calls, right? So what if there weren't any night calls?
And
I would have sucked at that.
And ironically, I looked at training hours. Everybody's making them. Nearly everybody is making them. But they're not here on the Saturdays. So they're making 36 a year, okay? Which is their pension minimum. But the standard of 50% of departmental offered trainings, they are by far, I can't track that. That's too hard for me to track. What I'm telling you is they're getting 36 a year, but on a Saturday when I say we're, you know, whatever it is, the majority of them are not here. And so there are a lot of questions in here regarding training on whether we should go to one Saturday a month, one Saturday and quarterly, basic and advanced level trainings. Whether members...
Ray already said it. It's always a problem.
Should members with greater than 2 years' experience be expected to be here on basic level training days to train the new people? Okay? And that's a mixed feeling. So, Ken, okay, you're a well-trained, intermediate-seasoned member.
Want to come roll hose?
Well, part of it is you need to know that.
But I mean, this is core of our issues here. Okay,
no,
should I expect you here the two Saturdays a month that we train? Because half the shit we're training on you already know, so we're wasting your time. Or should you be here to train the new people, which is additionally burdensome on you? Because you have limited time to give the department. And let's assume that I'm going to get you whatever it is that Ken wants next in his development plan, whether that is officer development, driver operator, whatever the shit that is, I'm going to deliver that to you somehow. Okay? But the expectation of two Saturdays, is that a reasonable expectation? And I think that is the meat and bones of some of the shit we got to sort out.
And that's what you signed up for. You knew that company.
But not everybody.
Yeah, it's been that way.
And I can tell you, people with family commitments, by far different than yours.
Yeah, my kids don't pay home fees. I'm good every Saturday.
But it doesn't mean it's not worth discussing to see if it can change. But yes, it's been that way forever.
But so the things that we have noodled about is first Saturday basic and second advanced, and then we have a quarterly drill. But I honestly believe that's not enough teamwork. We're going to try and embrace participation in the Fire Academy in Boulder, and that we're going to start routinely, instead of a Netherland fire training, we're going to go down and rotate through the burn building with the structure.
Well, that's always fun. I mean, I know, but there was a time we were trying to have...
But I can't bring every new person to the burn building who hasn't been through Fire Academy, so something still has to happen here. But there is this overwhelming frustration that the middle-level people aren't getting anything other than the shit work of maybe training people that don't want to be trained. I don't know. But I know there's a frustration in there.
Yeah.
And we can't do company-level drills because not enough people show up.
Right. So, two things. The 10% requirement, I will call that a goal, because there's going to be people that are very close to that and most certainly have the tools and the knowledge to be part of this club, right? This district. Running calls.
I agree with that, but there may be people in this room that believe that there's a minimum standard that you should meet.
There's got to be, in a volunteer department, there's got to be some flexibility to that. There has to be.
There has to be a standard for safety. And I know Dirt hates pulling the safety card, but I'm going to say, if I don't know who the hell's showing up with me, and I don't know if they've trained to attack or whatever it is, I don't want them going with me. And if that means that they can't volunteer, that means they can't volunteer, because we're not going to be safe about it.
No, it means they can volunteer by answering the phone.
Okay.
No, I mean, it means they're not going on the call with you, and that's fine.
And I agree. And the problem is, these training hours, they might all be medical.
But that's what I mean. I mean, it cannot be a written requirement that you, you know, safety is probably something that you want to adhere pretty close to what the requirements are. Maybe our requirements are not even enough for safety. I don't know that, but there's got to be a little bit of give and take.
Break down the hours into you need 10 of this, 8 of this, and you know.
Okay.
We just went down this road.
Maybe that's a way to skin that. And we...
Right? I mean, that's kind of what you're saying. I want to make sure this person has 10 hours of EMS, this person has 12 hours of fire, this person has 8 hours of car.
To keep their CERT up. That doesn't help us.
Right. So what I know is...
It's not just 36 hours.
Coal Creek Canyon has a minimum number of live burn days that they participate in. And the downside is, Nicholas...
Yeah.
You don't make your minimum burn day training, you don't get to come. And what that means is, when I have a fire and it's me and you, you don't get to come.
Right.
And Charlie won't like it, but he and I are on different ends of the spectrum. On the day that my 6% responding member shows up in the back of the ambulance with me, and I feel comfortable with their skills, I'm grateful to have them. And that just occurred.
And you are the only one, because I can tell you from the officer corps that it is more of a hindrance, and I'd rather have the police drive the ambulance than to try to figure out what they can or cannot do. It's easier for me to do it all than it is to try to manage somebody who has been to 30 calls in the last year, or... You know, whatever that number is, it is.
There are calls where you can't do it all by yourself, and help is needed.
Then I will call for mutual aid.
So there you have it.
I mean, it's... I totally understand.
Yeah, we are.
But it seems counterintuitive that you actually would run a call status one versus taking the person with you that may not 100% meet a requirement.
With 10 years of experience on the department.
If it's completely unsafe, I get it. If there is a gray area that we will say, you're all right, good enough, let's go.
There are people in this
program. Yeah, why wouldn't you just have them drive?
5 years.
Here. There are people in this program.
I have asked them to do things on the call.
Period. No, 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 why wouldn't you let...
Attach this to
if
this.
If there was someone who didn't have the experience...
And they looked at me.
You thought they were a good driver.
I was fucking crazy. It was like,
maybe.
You should be able to do this example. And this is the thing about repetitive training that I believe in. It's just muscle memory. So when shit is going down, when it's burning and there's people running out on fire from the building, you don't just go, I have forgotten everything I ever learned. One day it will happen. I mean, yeah. We're fortunate that in our department that's not a thing that doesn't really happen. But one day it's going to. And I turned up at a burning building and I'd be like, oh, I could probably do something now, but I have no idea. I've got a thing in my hand.
So anyhow, there's a real life field of contention on expectations.
And I actually am not quite sure if this is a board matter or if the board is just going to task the officers of the district of figuring that out.
Yeah. I believe it is a board matter because here sits our career and volunteer people bringing it to you as an issue.
If it's brought to us as an issue, yeah.
And I will tell you, I have an opinion, mm-hmm. It's clearly not supported, that people have to contribute more than they cost, and that I will accept help given. And if I'm in a situation where I'm uncomfortable with my helper, then I will make a decision to not put them in a role that endangers me or someone else. But there are a group of people here that wish for them to be excluded from the department.
I think that exclusion is more than people have been here for a significant number of times. So they go in their fire one, they've got the EMT, but they're not turning up for calls, they're not turning up for training. All of those skills are fungible. So when they turn up, they're like, I don't know what to do.
The thing that's always annoyed me is the amount of money. It's always annoyed me is the amount of money that we spend sending people to EMT school, sending people to fire one and whatnot, and like 6 months later they go get a job with you.
Yeah, we end up being a stepping stone.
Yeah,
that's always bothered me.
Don't be frustrated, you can't fix it, and don't sweat it.
Cost of doing business.
But we've always had our Wainwrights.
Yes, but to the point, this past Saturday at 8 p.m., 7:30, George New was covering a shift. We had a call, and he was the only person that showed up. Not a single fucking volunteer on Saturday night. I don't know where they all were.
At the movies.
Well, ironically, I didn't go to the movie because I was covering Nicholas.
Well, she and I did.
Yeah.
I know.
We sat next to your wife there.
Yes, she sat next to us as well. Yeah, it was the three of us.
But my point...
We could have done something.
So I'm just as affected by status one as anybody else here.
Right.
Just as frustrated. And I don't know that mandating a night per week is the wrong answer. But I do guess I need to know if that is what we mandate, how many people are going to walk that might show up some other time.
I also think we have a good opportunity with this officer program that we're trying to implement to actually change these responses, to actually have zero people that fall below that minimum requirement.
I believe, and so Charlie has been pretty fortunate. I shouldn't say that. It appears Charlie might have better response on his shift than some other shifts. That may or may not be true, or it may just be statistically aberrant. But my point is that I may push down at the shift officer level, you're responsible for getting your people to show up on your shift. But the hard example of this is Kehoe gets assigned to B shift. And he only comes out on B shift days.
No, 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 he's mine.
Everybody's yours. That's where you get more people.
My fear is that this works negatively when you say only B shift is my coverage, and although I'm available, somebody else, I know you wouldn't do that, but there might be people. But I do want to push down to the company officer level you need to talk to your people and get them to show up.
How often?
Whatever that takes.
How often do people have a, whatever you're saying, a night shift or that's going to happen after we all left? What is that? Pray tell.
Outside people could sign up for 36 hours of shift work per month and be a member of the department. We have historically had some people that have signed up for night shift here, and they have either done in-station coverage, but at one point we tried to come up with a calendar where people would sign up and say, I'm good for Tuesday night.
I'm the person who will respond when my pager goes off on Tuesday night.
That's correct. And that fell into disuse.
And
I think it's the smartest way to ensure nighttime coverage.
So what, getting back to your punitive measures of if you don't meet a certain requirement, you have to do...
Carry your stick.
Could it be... So right now that doesn't really... So once a month seems to be more of a reasonable...
So we have roughly 22 volunteers. Okay. And
those numbers don't work.
When the probability of you running the call on the night shift is about 1 in 10.
If the district pushes that responsibility to the shift captains, I don't know the answer. I just ask a question. Like, what do we do from our level of management to provide them the necessary tools to actually succeed in that? I mean, I wonder how difficult that would be.
Well, so the supervisory class that Captain Schmidtman is going to attend, it talks about resolving supervision with creativity and what? Something. But it's something more than a hammer. And So I agree with you, Henry. There's all kinds of fraught with peril, right? So, you know, an ambulance call we can manage with two, maybe three people. But you know, we have status ones on Sunday morning, Saturday afternoon. And if I'm committed to Tuesday night, then on Wednesday when we have an MVA...
You're not going, because you just did your commitment.
Yeah, and so I don't have the perfect answer.
It's going to get messy with mutual aid calls and all the stuff. Like if you have departments, I'm sure they'll have shown up on your structure fire with people that you have no idea.
But as example, we had a mutual aid tender request the other night for Timberline. Dave Femmer and Ken showed up for a structure fire tone. And people, so if it was a true fire within our district, and I think they could ferret out, it was a tender request. And I was covering from home, so I didn't even have a shift officer to send. We had two people that came to the station. You remember what it was in the old days when you got toned for a mutual aid assist?
Mm-hmm.
People just don't care anymore. It's somebody else's responsibility, or I don't know.
So I think we also need to look how the shift captain responsibility matrix works out. I mean, we've got to probably give that some time to adapt some of these policies to see if it changes anything from today's status. And I don't think that's going to be an overnight thing.
I don't think any of this is instant. It's been a slow decline. And it's changed since I joined. You come on a call and you wouldn't get on the call because it was full. And then there. It's like, wow, okay.
That's never going to not occur, right? Unless you're physically here on shift.
I think one of the things that potentially disincentivizes people to do nights
is what?
Disincentivizes, makes them not want to come and do nights, is why should I come here and just sit down and watch TV on that? I can do that at home if nothing happens. There's no...
Well, you're
vocational training. There's nothing for them to do specifically. When they come here, the shift captain says to them, hey,
ship's got toilets.
We stop the ambulance. Yeah, if you want to come here, just be gentle. So it's like,
really, if you've got something where you say, hey, if you do a shift night, this month is ambulance months.
But what I'll tell you, Ian, so I don't disagree with you, and that is my perennial issue with my career shift captains, right? I bust their ass 8 to 5, okay? Yeah. 5 o'clock, they want to eat dinner, sit in a lazy boy, and then even now, not even a local volunteer, I got a shifty that shows up at 7 p.m., and they want to learn every truck and sign off my job, my rookie book, and all of those things. And the bitching I get is we can't work 24/7. And so I don't know how to make that work better.
We need to not let set the bar so low. I mean, when people come in, we have to say these are the requirements. And this, if you can't meet this, then you can't meet this. And it's just, I feel like we're just spinning the wheels and we're like, well, you can sort of give us a little bit of something, maybe never, and let's put all this effort into it. I mean, I think the biggest gripe with the most active members is that we're setting the bar really low. I mean, it's hard to watch Coal Creek turning volunteers away and Sugarloaf turning volunteers away because they have too many. And what are we doing? How are we screwing that up so bad that we don't have our volunteer list?
But I would fit, well, I'm speculating here, but it's probably not a function of those requirements being set a different way. I mean, look, I think if this is a, if this was a fully paid department, everybody was on payroll, everybody had responsibilities, then yeah, absolutely. Those requirements, they have to be. This is a volunteer department still. There is a little bit of a gray area.
It's a combination. It's a combination department, and I think that is a huge challenge. And I think, I honestly believe deep down that the beginning of what we started today with the roles of the captains is a huge step in the right direction. But we need to have a ton of buy-in with that. And on my side, and I know Rick knows this, but on my side, I can't have giant projects if I'm trying to manage the training calendar and organize an academy for new volunteers and help them get their rookie book signed and all of that. I think, and I'll shut up right after I say the next thing, I think we've lost sight of why at least the officers are here, and that's for the volunteers. I think the volunteers are the core of this job, and we've lost sight of that with even my pay and, you know, all the overhead that we've created, that we don't have enough money for training, and we don't have the time, and we don't have the time to promote that. All right, I'm done.
Yeah, I think the volunteers are probably the core of the department, but, I mean, make no mistakes, the paid shift captains, like, that, it's a job,
nope.
Right?
No.
I mean, it's like, it's, I mean, it's not just, you know, in my world, if you're a vice president, you don't just get to delegate everything, right? You're still working. Right. I mean, I expect that from my officers in my company. You don't get to delegate.
I'm telling you, my shift guys are working hard.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And somehow, there's more work to go around than we can seem to accomplish.
Maybe we need more shift captains. We need to have a fourth one.
I don't think that's the solution.
Okay.
Well, I'm kind of a...
Why is there more volunteers, more departments?
I'm sure these guys have a lot to say about it, so I think we should probably just wait.
Yeah, that's what I think as well, because I think that in a lot of situations I've been in, it's like, you know, the top people, management people sit up here and they, you know, they dictate down how things should go, and it's like, Have you ever been in an emergency room? You have a fucking clue what you're talking about. And so I don't want to be like, you know, we're the board of directors and we're telling you this is what you should do. And you're like, yeah, we were in an ambulance 12 years ago. And guess what? Things are different now. And I would rather get information from you guys about what your angst is, what the problems are, some possible solutions to this. And working with it that way rather than us saying, well, I think that you guys should be doing, Charlie, you should have a better handle on the people that are going to be under you and that you should be doing this and da-da-da-da. It's like, I think you have a better handle of telling us how it is that you should be doing and what you need from us to help you to support do that. So I would like to see a little bit of the bottom coming up as opposed to us and you trying to do a down thing when I'm just sitting here. I mean, I'm usually thousands of miles away on a phone going, what the fuck is going on there? You know?
You're going to be again next meeting.
Well, no, I will not be at the next meeting, it looks
minus
like.
Minus 36.
So.
All right, I think.
I would like to see.
That was a good tip of the iceberg, right? Ian?
Mm-hmm.
I think we should cap it here. We're going to get some information from Ian for the membership. I think we have somewhat of a structure or the idea of a structure in place, how to delegate, how to reassess responsibilities. And I think at some point we'll have to do that and see how it works.
And then we're all going to stand in a circle and hold hands and sing Kumbaya.
And maybe we'll meet here again in a year or whatever and say, well, shit, that didn't work at all.
Well, I think we'll be meeting in 6 months.
Oh, right, we'll be meeting much more frequently, but I don't want to be sitting here again in a year and say, well, whatever we did, you know, in the beginning of 2020 was a waste.
We might find out that our assumptions are invalid.
Right, sure. And let's find out, right?
Yeah, and the only way to do that is to start answering the questions and start getting info and start, you know, doing it. I mean, just, yeah.
I mean, having seen your questions, I'm pretty impressed that you put into that. You definitely hit on a number of items. I'll communicate what I've seen to the group and certainly the feeling that I get here to the group. And maybe we do still do the survey. Maybe we still like run it and just see what comes back. But we should mix that with this is the big list we came up with. These are the things. These are the things we think we can fix. And maybe, who knows, from the survey we find some stuff that we're like, that were giant holes that we didn't know existed.
Well, I took the question from the prior year surveys of how do you feel about officer training off? You know why. Because it's non-existent. I don't need to get bashed very poor 30 times. Okay, so I got that one. but I did put a lot of thought in it.
All right, item 7 on the agenda, executive session. Do we need any?
Not needed.
Not needed. Announcements from the board?
I don't think I'll be here next month. But I'll call.
Via phone.
That's going to be a hard one, yeah.
Okay. Any other issues? If not, I present a motion to adjourn the meeting at 21:59. All in favor?
Aye. So moved and aye.
All right, Jim. Meeting is adjourned at 21:59.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tape form. Any word on the Surrey Tippa memorial for Tom?
No, but pertinent discussion outside of public comment. So bear with me. Ian, don't leave yet.